Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hunt.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Terry Hines.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Terry Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapi Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women, and Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
I'm Maggie Anderson. I am the creator of the Empowerment Experiment and the author of Our Black Year, my family's year-long stand, completely living off of black-owned businesses. When we decided to take on this public pledge, we had no idea how hard it would be. There was only one black-owned grocery store in all of Illinois, and that grocery store closed 5 months before we finished our year. And I have 2 little girls. That means no fresh milk, no fresh meats, no fresh produce. But I put them through that because we took the stand and we wanted really to do something extreme out of love for our community, to expose how few black businesses there still are, to refute negative stereotypes about black-owned businesses, and to expose economic injustice that still persists in America. After the year, I decided that I could not go back to corporate. I could not go back to law. I've made this issue of economic racism and really trying to create economic empowerment in our black community my life. The black hair care firms, they sustained the civil rights movement. Black women created these companies, huge, thriving companies. And we needed that. We talk about Black Wall Street now because we shine a light on what happened in Tulsa. Most black neighborhoods were anchored by these Black Wall Streets. And if we could bring that back, America would be better. I'm not saying bring all of it back. That would probably be impossible. But we can bring black hair care back. There are great black hair care companies that exist, black-owned hair care companies that exist right now. And it would be wonderful for, in America, just like other groups own their culturally relevant products and industries, that the black community can own the biggest black hair care brands, that the black community can own black beauty supply stores. 3% of the beauty supply stores in black neighborhoods, and black people know what I'm talking about. If you go into a black neighborhood, you're going to see a beauty supply store, and they're going to sell all the black hair care products that only black people use, and they are not owned by black people. So I've issued the Black-Owned Hair Care Challenge, just asking everyday folks to say, "Hi, my name is Maggie Anderson, and I accept the Black-Owned Hair Care Challenge," and tell the world that from now on, if I'm going to buy black hair care products, I'm going to make sure it's from a black-owned company.
Favorite guest? I've been asked who my favorite guest is, or who are some of the interviews that really kind of stick out with you, or some kind of variation thereof. I'm Carrie Hines, and I have to say, in honor of looking at our big milestone of the Hair Radio Morning Show, It's given me some time to reflect, and I wanted to share some of these reflections with you guys, the fans of the broadcast. Let me say, thinking about guests, it gives me that doing the Hair Radio Morning Show is a great joy because I get to live out, meeting my heroes, growing up and listening to amazing singers, watching amazing television actors and movie stars, and then getting an opportunity to literally talk to them, and they know my name. It's been extraordinary. And so to think some of the most influential artists of our time, we've had an opportunity to welcome right here to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Folks like, of course, the legendary multi-Grammy award-winning We Are the World singer, Miss Dionne Warwick, who worked, of course, on that project with Lionel Richie, Michael Jackson, Tina Turner, Cyndi Lauper, Diana Ross. The list just goes on and on and on. And so to have this amazing artist, Miss Warwick, to even know who I am, let alone to join me live on the Hair Radio Morning Show for a special interview, was quite remarkable. And now, I had already interviewed Dionne's sister, Dee Dee, who had passed away several years back, and I had interviewed Dee Dee twice. And Dee Dee's voice to me, I never will forget her voice. It sounded so much like Dionne's voice. So this was great. When I had a chance to talk to Dionne prior to me conducting the interview, I remember I had a chance to say, to catch Ms. Warwick's ear, and I said, you know, I interviewed your sister Dee Dee, not once, but twice. And it was always one of my favorite interviews, just the most beautiful voice. And so, they had a big group, the Drinker Sisters and all of that. And so, great thing. So when I'm asked about my favorite guest, Dionne Warwick has to be way up high.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines.
Crystal Jones Bond of Asway's Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. It is my honor to welcome back to our broadcast Mr. Jorge. And along with Jorge, we have Miss Naomi. Welcome, guys. Welcome to the All New Hair Radio Morning Show.
Welcome.
So much.
Thank you so much, Gary. How are you?
Awesome. I am doing great. Well, first, I want to kind of jump on in, and to all of our sharp-eared listeners, they kind of already know who you are, Jorge.
Okay.
Because you have been a part of the content and programming throughout our network, I should say. We have a wonderful podcast that's available on 9 platforms, including Spotify and Apple, and they can find you right there. So when they're on listening to their favorite music, you've already informed a great deal of folks all about autism. when they have listened to you on the podcast on Spotify, in addition to our archived content through the Hair Radio Morning Show. So we are just so honored. You did a great job. And so I just wanted to let you know that on behalf of all of us at the Hair Radio Morning Show, thank you for educating us on the subject of autism. Great job.
Thank you so much.
Now, today we have a very special reason for bringing you back to this network and to our amazing show, and that is because you're not alone, like Michael Jackson sang. You are not alone. We have Miss Naomi, who is, I'm going to let you introduce Miss Naomi Jorge. Who is Naomi? Tell us all about Naomi Jorge.
Naomi, I guess you can say it in three simple words. I love you.
Wow, okay. And so we're going to just expound on that a little bit. Naomi, if you haven't figured it out already, Naomi and Jorge are an amazing couple who I have the great honor and privilege to introduce you guys to on a much deeper level as well. And that is because Jorge himself has been considered autistic, and so today's focus is to see how you guys, and Naomi, you're a big part of this as well, how to see how you guys are kind of, you know, building and starting a brand new relationship with something like autism as the backdrop as well. And so we're going to talk about all of that, but first let's kind of at least tell the folks, just remind everybody, Jorge, on what your life is like with autism. We'll start there.
Yes, for sure, Kerry, for sure. I guess I can tell you autism.
And we're going to have you to speak up really well, mister. Yes, sir. You speak up really well on there. Go right ahead.
I guess I can tell you guys that autism is a blessing, but a curse in disguise is a blessing. There's a lot of difficulties that I struggle with, but there's a lot of blessings and benefits that Naomi can have with autism. She can agree. But autism, on a day-to-day basis, I struggle socially. And as far as sensitivity, the noises, the volumes can be a lot more difficult to manage compared to you guys that hear six times lesser than we do.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, and you, go ahead. Did you have something else you wanted to
as
add?
As far as relationships, day-to-day meeting people, and I guess it can be hard to communicate, especially when I'm overwhelmed, or it can be hard to understand what someone's feeling, judging by their looks. But it's usually things that I can deal with and I cope with, but I also know how to manage it enough to help me, you know, deal with life on a day-to-day basis, Kurt.
Awesome. Well, let me just, as you guys know out there, we all have Google fingers. You know, we're all Google professors. So once I looked up autism, and online it says this, autism is a complex neurobehavioral disorder characterized by impairment in reciprocal social interaction, impairment in communication, and the presence of repetitive and stereotypic patterns of behaviors, interests, and activities. The onset of symptoms is typically before the age of 3. The severity of impairment in the given domains, as well as the pattern of impairments, varies from individual to individual. That is why diagnosticians refer to a spectrum of disability, and we've all heard that ASD, autism spectral disorder. So now I want to turn over a little bit, and we're going to get a little bit more into this. And as I mentioned earlier at the top of this wonderful piece, is that we have an entire video that's out there. You can look and see Mr. Jorge. He's on camera with me as well, which is on our Salon TV Network app, as well as on our Salon TV channel, and then, of course, on Spotify with a podcast. Now, I've got to turn to, I'm getting ready to say, our very special guest today, Naomi, who this is the first time you're making a debut on the Hair Radio Morning Show. So welcome and good morning.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm kind of nervous, but...
Oh, no, no, no. Don't be nervous. You are amongst friends, and we welcome you. And so, Naomi, and that's what I want to do. I want to start. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
A little bit of myself? Well,
yes.
I can describe myself as a loving person, first of all.
Yes.
I love to be myself, and I also like to be the right, no matter what the society says. I
awesome.
Always like to be the right in this world.
Wonderful. Now, I have to say that the two of you are a couple. And,
yes.
Jorge, we are familiar with Jorge's challenges in being autistic. And,
mm-hmm.
Naomi, you are not. You are not autistic. So I want, what's your impression? What did you, when you guys met and you started to this amazing friendship, what went through your mind? Were you familiar with autism? Because I really, until I had a chance to meet Jorge and learn up close what this is all about, and I can again thank Mr. Jorge for that. You know, I was totally unknowing. So this whole thing is very important. It was a big part of my education, and we're helping a lot of listeners today with this as Jorge has kind of educated them along the way as well. So what went through your mind, Naomi?
Well, being honest.
Yes. Oh, sure, be honest. Yes. We're not going to tell anybody on the show. It's just between us three today.
being honest, when we just met, I like him as a friend because he always been a wonderful person, an excellent man. At first, I didn't know he was autistic because back in the time, I didn't really know what autistic looks like. I thought back in the moment, I thought autistic was, as many movie theater, they pointed out as more like mentally challenged, but he definitely he is a wonderful man. So I learned what is autistic when I met him. When he told me, "Hey, I'm autistic," I'm like, "Are you serious? You're lying, you're lying." But he showed me actually it's true. He struggled socially, but definitely that's something that we can work on, because the key of our relationship is that it's just accepting to each other, accepting our strengths and also weaknesses. We need to accept our weaknesses in order to overcome and to achieve our goals also as a couple. So he needs to accept me as I am, and I also need to accept him as he is, as an autistic, wonderful person, I will say. So we also need to love to each other. Doesn't matter if he's not perfect. He won't be perfect, as well as I won't be. I will never be perfect. But we can be perfect to each other, right, Georgie?
I agree.
You agree?
Wow.
So
I'm just, yes, please, go right ahead, Naomi.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry.
No, please.
So, being honest, being with an autistic man as Georgie has been a blessing. He sometimes, he might say, it's not a blessing, it's like a curse. I don't really think so. It's just how we handle the things. Can be a curse depending if we don't know how to handle autism. If we know what it is, so we know how to handle it. Exactly. So we know how to handle it. And once we know, that can be a blessing, because what I love from Georgie is that he can lie to me. Literally, he can. He can, because he can. You cannot when he try to lie to you. He can. Sometimes he tries to impress or do something or try to, I don't know, to lie, but you can tell by his eyes that he's lying. And he, at the end, even if I don't notice, he says, like, oh, I'm sorry, Naomi, I lied to you. I'm like, okay. He's really honest.
5 seconds later after telling him, yeah.
Like, babe, I lied. Yeah, because he gets totally, like, uncomfortable with him. He can be an actor when he's lying.
Yes.
So he gets really uncomfortable with himself, and you can notice. So you start asking him, hey, Georgie, there is something wrong. And then he's like, oh, my God. I'm so sorry, Naomi, I lied to you. And I said, I'm not as young as baby, I know.
So to interrupt, I'm going to tell you the truth. So we were, like, a couple of weeks back. We were laughing about it. I said, Naomi, I'm going to be honest. If I ever have staples, if I come home from work with staples in my eyes, you got to know that I cheated on you.
Oh.
But definitely he won.
No. We know he's joking.
But definitely he won.
I am blown away. I really am. I have to say I'm just beyond words. Beyond words. And I appreciate your both of you being so candid and just being upfront and honest. And I have to say in this, you know, let me just catch everybody up to speed on this. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, I have two folks on who are very special to me, and they're actually very special guests today. We're talking about the subject of not just autism, but how it also affects the folks closest to you. And in the case of our guest today, we have Mr. Jorge. We're going to just say Jorge. Now, Jorge is autistic.
Yes,
and
sir.
Yes, you are autistic. But, you know, you're not here today by yourself. You have an amazing, amazing, wonderful lady named Naomi, who we're overjoyed to welcome you to the Hair Radio Morning Show. And to hear the words that you've just expressed about Jorge and how you're working together, you're a team, a unit, if you will, it's just mind-blowing. And so I just wanted you to know that. It sounds just...
Thank you so much, Carrie.
Awesome. You did well, Jorge. You did well.
Really appreciate
you did well. Okay. Yes. And Naomi... You did well. You did well. Okay. So I just want you guys to know that. Now, for you listeners out there, this is really, really an important subject. And you know what? The whole thing about the social aspect of it, because these are things that those of us who are not dealing with autistic may take for granted. And so I can actually tell you I would probably lose my patience very quickly early on, because I might not understand what to look out for. So this is why it's important to familiarize yourself, or to, I think, educate is a better way to say it. Did you begin to kind of do some research, Naomi? How have you kind of, you know, prepared yourself, so to speak, for some of the challenges in being with someone who's autistic?
Yes. We had to do some research. In my case, I need to do and I'm still doing some research about how to work with an autistic when he's on his mood. Sometimes he gets overwhelmed with certain things, with certain noises too. So I do, in my case, I really need to be really calm and try to speak to him really in a lovely way. For example, in his case, he loves me when I hug him. Anytime that I need to tell him maybe a really strong topic, maybe something that can make him overwhelmed, I need to first hug him and tell him beautiful stuff, and then I can start telling him what I really need to tell him.
And it works every time.
Yes, and it works all the time. Thanks, God.
But to interrupt you, I also have to, you know, get onto a same level with understanding that it's not just an autistic in a relationship. It's also Naomi.
Yes.
The non-autistic. So we're both getting to the point where we're accepting each other's differences, and we're also trying to learn how to manage each other's differences instead of making firing gas.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, go right ahead.
There's no firing where we can create an explosion. We don't want that. So I think for me, the best thing that I've been trying to do is learning that I am autistic. I struggle socially. So instead of asking her to help me and be patient with me, I have to do the same thing for her. Please be patient with her because I'm struggling.
Exactly. So and that's you were next on our list. I just wanted you to know. I was coming to you next, Jorge, but you took us right there. Because I was about to ask you, now we have identified the challenges of a person who is non-autistic and interacting with someone in a relationship who is autistic.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Now we're going to flip it around as Jorge kind of just went there. So what are some of the, I'm coming in with my stereotypes, of course, so that's so that I understand. But Jorge, are there any challenges in being in a relationship with someone who is non-autistic?
Honestly, I would be honest with you. The main challenge is social tension. Like sometimes you might want to say certain things, but there's a time and place for everything. So differentiating those two differences can be difficult depending on how I am feeling and depending on why I'm feeling and when I'm feeling.
Okay, and I was just thinking as you were saying, I was like, well, that kind of sounds like all relationships to me, but I know what you mean. It can be exacerbated or, you know, accentuated because of the autism.
A lot more intense for us.
Right, exactly. Okay, wow. Well, folks, again, if you're just kind of tuning on in, you are listening to the All New Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and with me today on the line, we have Jorge and Naomi. Now, you guys are in the Northeast. Where are you guys? What state are you guys in?
Where are you? New Jersey.
New Jersey, okay. And you go ahead. I'm sorry, Jorge. Go right on in. Jump in.
All the way from Atlantic City, New Jersey to New York.
And we love folks in Atlantic City because we have the Hair Nation Expo events down in Atlantic City. So
yes,
at the Showboat Hotel. So we just love that. And we're going to remind folks about that before we say goodbye to you today. But right now, I kind of want to jump back on in, and I appreciate the way that you both are being, as I said earlier, you're being very candid about this, and it's not easy to do, because there are a lot of folks out there who have children who are autistic, who have all kinds of, parents and siblings and so forth, and this was something that, me, myself, and my generation, I was not as familiar with this. So this seems to me to be something that's relatively recent for me to learn about, as I mentioned earlier. The other thing is that New Jersey seems to, as a state in terms of dealing with autism, has its own set of numbers and things. It just seems like it's kind of an anomaly. It's in a different they have all kinds of different dynamics in terms of how autism affects, it seems, the people are affected in the state of New Jersey versus some of the other states. So we,
Very right. Can
definitely research that. So I just have to say, Jorge, can you describe to us a little bit more about some of the way autism might affect someone like yourself, some of the things that might be, again, a little bit more of a challenge. So you said kind of listening or like just social interactions and things like that. That's the whole idea, I think, behind it, right?
For sure. I'm just going to start off with this. I can't tell you what other autistics feel, but as far as myself, I can try to help you understand autism in general. Autism, if we think about it, kind of refer back to a mixtape or a studio session, right? You see different knobs and different volumes for different areas, right?
Yeah.
Now imagine that as an autistic, where you see different volumes for different areas. Now incorporate the spectrum to it. A spectrum means not everybody that's autistic is going to act or deal with things the way this autistic does. So when I think about autism, to help people understand a spectrum, you got to refer back to that studio session with different knobs to different areas. Which one can be louder, which one can be softer, which one can be overwhelmed, or which one's going to be a little overwhelmed. There's always a different knob to each autistic.
Wow. I have to say, Now, there are all kinds of beliefs out there where this has come from. And, Naomi, I'm sure you've heard of some of these things. Does it not go through your mind sometimes? You're like, well, where did this, you know, where did this come from? Because, you know, and when you see and meet, when you meet Jorge, you meet him and you don't, you know, you can't imagine. And he's, Jorge, you're just such a down-to-earth, smart as a whip, kind-hearted soul. And, you know, if you didn't really share that you were, you know, autism is one of your challenges, if you will, we wouldn't know.
But we'd recognize.
Yes, right.
We wouldn't know. So, like you kind of mentioned earlier, Naomi.
What does autism look like?
Right.
Yeah.
What does it, well, let me ask you guys that question. What does it look like now?
It looks like acceptance.
Yeah. Definitely. It looks like, acceptance. And we all are different. Definitely, every people, we struggle in certain areas, but we can be, all of us, we can be different because, and struggle in different areas, but at the same time, we all will look the same. Autistic, there is not a special face for autistic. Autistic is just a normal person that struggle in an area that I might not struggle.
Kind of explain it like this. Autism, we make the easy things look hard.
Yeah.
And the hard things look easy.
Yeah, sometimes.
So
yeah.
The easiest things that most people would take for granted, we struggle with. Like, most people wouldn't think about going out in public and having to worry about noises. So everything that's easy to you guys might be harder for us. But most things that are harder for you guys are actually easier for us, such as technology or art. Or things like the hardest things we can do, but it's the easiest things.
Yes, sure.
That are really difficult for autism.
Yes, sure.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you one thing, and I can say this. Jorge, you do not let any of these things stop you.
No,
you
sir.
You thrive. And there are folks out here who may not, their challenges may be some things that we just can't see or know about. And they seem able-bodied, so to speak, but we let those things, they kind of impede us from going on with our lives. And if there's one thing I'm picking up today, right here on this show, in this moment, is that to have someone to support you as you do, and I mean this to each of you, to have each other, it says a whole lot. It
sometimes,
says a whole lot.
Yeah.
So, sometimes I just want to, yes, go ahead.
Sometimes when I'm overwhelmed with Naomi, it really helps to move in gratitude, you know. Certain times I'll be like, man, she don't understand me. And sometimes I want to be upset. But it helps to live in gratitude, like, even though I'm upset with her, I appreciate that she's not like everybody else.
Well,
and
no, I can hear she's not like everybody else. I heard that as soon as she said about two or three sentences. I heard that very clearly, Naomi. I have to say, I'm so honored, and so have our listeners. So, we can tell why, you know, that how you guys are together, obviously. Great job for both of you. Now, I want to just inform our listeners a little bit here. And again, you know, we want to remind everybody that if you want to, you know, find out more about Jorge and Naomi's journey, you can, because Jorge has a wonderful Instagram account, so that you guys can visit and sign up or follow him or whatever they say these days. Go to what is it on Instagram? Is follow?
Model fan page would be stylistic_autistic.
Okay, so let's say that again slowly for everybody. Folks my age and up. Go slow. Yes.
My model fan page would be stylistic_autistic.
And that's your fan page for your modeling career. We want to remind everybody, too, because we didn't really get to do that today so much. But Jorge is a model. He is fantastic. He's also going to be working with us and continuing to work with us here on the Hair Radio Salon TV Network, all that wonderful good stuff. And
yeah.
Also, Miss Naomi, I'm hoping you both will be joining us. I saw some great pictures. and we love the pictures. First of all, I saw, I said, wow. I immediately contacted Jorge, and I said, this is awesome. You guys make an awesome couple, and now
thank
we know why.
Thank you so much.
So,
thank
great
you
job.
So.
It's my pleasure. So, listen, we're going to have you guys to come back soon to the broadcast and kind of, you know, bring us up to date. We're going to continue to follow you guys. And, you know, and again, on Instagram, go to stylistic_autistic. Again, that's stylistic_autistic. And that will connect you with Jorge's modeling page with all of his information. You could see a whole bunch of stuff there, which is just great. And again, visit on the internet. You can even Google the Kerry Hines podcast, and you could even type in Jorge's first name. I'm sure it'll pop up there, and you'll see the podcast from our original interview that we did, which we have a whole bunch of wonderful things and connections out there and podcasts and video and all that wonderful good stuff. And this interview, of course, will just play all across our networks for everybody and to keep them informed of what you're doing. So again, Naomi, any last thoughts? I'll ask each of you. Any last thoughts, Naomi?
Yes, sure. My last thought is that this relationship, this experience with Georgie has been definitely a blessing for me because that helped me to know what really love is. Love is not just a feeling, it's also a choice to, it's a choice to love that person. It's a choice to say, hey, I accept you as you are, doesn't matter what, and I chose you to love you just as you are. Also, he has helped me to be more tolerant, right, and more lovely, right, Georgie? And more
wow.
patient, of course. I don't used to be really patient with people before, but after since I've been here with him, it has been definitely a blessing, a personal blessing for me. I feel that I am a better person thanks to him.
It gets no better than that. Jorge, we're giving you the last word. Did you have anyone that you want to shout out to or last thoughts that you want to leave?
Wait. There's no shout out without Marcus. Marcus, if you are listening to this, shout out to Marcus. God bless you, man. Love you. John Freeman, shout out to you. Thank you for hooking me up with Kerry Hines. And to all the people that I sincerely love and genuinely appreciate, I thank God for you guys and your support. And you're just being you guys in my life. And Patty, love you. And everybody else, you guys know.
Okay.
So, Kerry Hines, shout out to Kerry. Thank you so much for this amazing opportunity once more. And
yes.
Looking forward to many more.
Awesome. Well, listen, I want to thank again Mr. Jorge and Naomi for being our guests on today's broadcast, two amazing individuals out here navigating the world. And, again, we're just honored to have them on the Hair Radio Morning Show and to come back soon.
Likewise.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that will help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at ChairWatch.com, or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ChairWatch, a new and better way to connect with your clients. You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Vincent Ellis White. Now, he is an author of a book called Finding Chris, My Father. I'd like to welcome to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Vincent. Welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate you for having me.
Yes, and well, first of all, and that's Vincent Ellis White. I want to make sure that's clear. Now, you are the author of this book, and I think it has such a very interesting subject matter that it deals with. Tell us about Finding Chris, My Father. What is it all about?
Okay, well, the book Finding Chris, My Father is a memoir that I wrote and published myself, and it's about my very intriguing story growing up dealing with fatherlessness. And to give you a quick synopsis of it, I grew up with a father that was a habitual offender, so he was in and out of jail, and he was definitely in more times than he was out. So I was raised, you know, like a lot of our other young African-American males, I was raised with just my mother in a single parent, single income home. And she used to take me to visit him 2 to 3 times a week at the prison, but she told me he was in school. And so I was a young kid. So, you know, when you're a young kid, you listen to your parents, and everything they say is golden. So, you know, I believed whatever she was telling me. She could have told me he was a unicorn. I probably would have believed it. But
right.
I thought he was in school. And, you know, my friends that read the book, they said, how would you not know he's in jail? And I said, well, you know, they're thinking I'm seeing jail bars, but I never saw any jail bars. I sat at a picnic table with him, and I'd be able to interact with him. I could touch him, give him a hug, you know, play basketball with him, met his friends and, you know, stuff like that. So in my mind, you know, he was in school, and that's what it was for a while. It wasn't until my, you know, adolescence, until I got a little bit older, that I realized you can't be in school for 8-10 years, you know, straight. You got to come out and be a doctor or somebody. So I knew something was going on at that point.
Right. How did you feel when you realized that he was incarcerated? How did you feel at that point when you found out he was incarcerated?
And that's a good question, because I started to, as I stated before, everything my mom said was golden, man, because I never know her to, like, you know, fabricate anything to me. But that showed me that, you know, she does shield things from me, her son, and, you know, it also showed me that my dad, you know, was doing the same thing. And I started acting out. You know, I was smelling myself a little bit in my preteens and teen years. So, you know, just like how other teens do, I started acting up, you know, and not just acting up, but I had a lot of anger inside of me because of different things. I saw my mother struggling with one income. I saw him popping in and out of her life. You know, I had that lie that was told to me and all kind of other things that was happening that I just needed a disciplinarian in the home. And even though my mother was very, you know, strict and stern about certain things, there's nothing like that male figure being in the home. You know what I mean? And but the shocker was when I turned 16 years old, my mother sat me down and she said, Vince, she was like, your father, you know, that you, I know you know and love and all the other stuff. She said, I want to let you know it's something that's been on my heart for a long time and I've been feeling guilty about it. And she said, your father that you know is your father is not your biological father. And we got into this big, huge argument because I blew up on her. And I always had this big respect for my mother, man. But I never got any arguments with her or anything. That's how I was raised. But I blew up on her because I was like, you know, first of all, this was a second lie. But then this was a huge lie because even though I had mad animosity for this man for different reasons, I loved him to death. I loved when he came around, when he was home. You know, I loved visiting him. And just all kind of things. So it just kind of turned my, put a whirlwind inside of my life, really. And I felt like I couldn't really trust anybody. I was asking her questions. She wasn't really answering them. She was more concerned with, you know, how was I dealing with that news. But, you know, I actually, after I got that news, I just started doing some different stuff, man. Like, I actually went and disowned his side of the family. And I was very close with them. Like, I spent time with them. Equal amount of time with them as I did with my mom's side, because even though he wasn't there, his family was there for me my entire life. But I disowned everybody, and my rationale was that they're not my blood. And I thought like I was the butt of a big joke, and like everybody, you know, knew the secret about me. I didn't find out until later that nobody knew. But I disowned the family, and I only was like really rocking with my mom's side of the family, which I said, I know they're my blood because I know I came from her mom, you know, so the last name White, I was only rocking with that side of the family. And my family was mad at me. I mean, it was all kind of stuff going on, man. And I ended up...
So where... Sure. Just to follow your story, where does... where? What happened to your actual father then? Did your mother tell you at that time?
Well, that's what I was getting to. So I graduated from high school, went to college, and when I turned 21, I called my family and I said I was changing my last name. And that's where I got more news at. I told my mom I was changing my middle and last name. My prior name was Vincent Lopez Mapp III. And I changed my name to Vincent Ellis White. And my rationale at the time of being 21 years old was that I knew the last name Ellis because my grandfather had that last name that I grew up with partially, and I knew the last name White was my blood, and I didn't look at the other side of my blood. So that lets you know I was going through an identity crisis. At that point is when my mom started giving me more information on it. I guess she thought I couldn't handle it until then, but she said, well, listen, you know, I already told you your family didn't know anything about the secret, but you've been so angry at your stepfather, and then now your biological father. And she was like, I never told him about you. And I said, wait, what? And she was like, I never told Chris Anderson about you. Because at 16, all she told me was that my dad's name was Chris Anderson. That was it. She didn't give me any more information or anything. So then she told me she never told my biological father about me. So I had to transfer all that anger that I had for him thinking he was a deadbeat dad, like, elsewhere. So I was just acting out. But then I started looking for him as well.
And well, so, was your mother like a teenager at this time, like when you were born?
No,
this sounds like something maybe a teenager would do. You said 35.
No, 25. But listen,
25,
okay. It's funny you say that because you think that, but I work for the state now for the Division of Child Support Enforcement.
Uh-huh.
How many mothers have done this same thing. Trust me, it's not a teenage thing. It's not an immature thing because I deal with mothers that are in their 30s that do it. It's a family secret. It's an embarrassment, you know, type thing. So what happened in talking to my mother as I got older was my mom said that my biggest mistake was not telling me and your father parted ways and I found out I was pregnant. And she said, and I should have told him, but I didn't. And then I met the guy that you thought was your father, and he was telling me, you know, worry about it. I'll take care of Vince like he's my own. He ended up signing my birth certificate, so he gave me his entire name. But nobody told me.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
What a dynamic person, Anna. Yeah.
Right. So later on, my mother tried to tell me, but at that point, I found out that the person I thought was my dad started putting his hands on my mother. So he threatened her like,
you know,
tell him my secret. So like I said, it's not just a thing of no immaturity, but it's like it was guilt. It was, being physically abused.
Wow.
It was all kind of stuff.
Vincent, this is a little bit of a different story, too, because, okay, so the gentleman that you believe was your father, who, was supportive as he wanted to sign that birth certificate and actually be your father, unlike a lot of folks today, and then he didn't want you to even know that you knew that he wasn't your father. That really doesn't happen all that much. I mean, really, I know it. I mean, I haven't heard of it too often. We see the opposite play out every day on Mari Povich show. So this is something that seems a little different.
Well, I mean, like I say, a lot of people are going to be very subjective with their opinions on this. Like, and I see both, especially me working with Child Support now, but I can see the good intentions in the beginning. I definitely see that. On the flip side, I don't recall him being such a great father, just to be honest. Because he wasn't there, I mean, for a lot of stuff, like even, you know, just giving me positive reinforcement and a positive role model. And those are attributes that a good, you know, father should possess as well. It was great that he stepped up, but when you step up, you got to step all the way up. You know what I'm saying?
I totally agree.
You can't get somebody your name and not tell them that you're not their father, but then you don't do anything, and later on it's not only going to be a mighty blow when they find out that you're not their father, but it's already been a big blow because you haven't even been there. So what I tell people actually is I say, hey, not only was I dealt a mighty blow to find he was my father, but on the low, I was kind of relieved because he hadn't been there, and I was kind of embarrassed the fact that all my friends knew I had a father in jail. You know what I mean? So I was looking forward to finding Chris, but then at the same time, I got disappointed because I thought Chris was trying to not be in my life either. Found out that he didn't know, and the beauty of
and
it all
that you had to go on was, you know, whatever your mother was kind of doling out to you in bits and pieces.
Right. Right. And the sad thing is, she didn't know any of his siblings. She didn't know any of his siblings or anything like that. And his name was so common. I like to share this one funny story. His name was so common that she had been looking for him to find him for me because she saw the hurt that I was dealing with and having him there. And she said that one time social services contacted her back and said, we think we found him. And so she rushed down into the social service office, like, you know, hoping to find my dad. And she said, they bring out a white man.
Chances are it's probably
like,
not your dad.
Yeah, and so, but the funny thing is, they were trying to convince her, well, this fits your description. No, you're missing something critical in there. He's not black, he's not white. So that was the funny part.
Wow.
I changed my name and all kind of stuff, but I don't want to give the whole story to the listener. They definitely got to get Finding Chris, My Father, the book, but I will tell you all, I ended up finding my father in the way that I met him and found him.
Well, hold on. Well, we're going to hold that. We're going to hold that for just a bit because I want to turn to your motivation for writing this book, and then we'll get into, I know, you know, that you do a lot of social type work now, but let's get into, so what was the motivation? When did you say, well, you know what, I've got to write a book about this? What was that motivation?
Okay,
we know that you went through the story, but what was the motivation for writing this book?
You know, that's a great question because when I met my dad, I didn't write the book right away. I had no thoughts on writing a book. Didn't know anything about writing a book. And all of a sudden, I was, just sitting there and I was thinking about the crazy turn of events that happened when I was, meeting my dad and going through the whole thing. And so I'm like, I gotta sit down and try to jot this. And so I sit down, and I'm like, all right, let me sit back and try to, write this down. And so I'm like, I don't know the first thing about writing a book. So I just started writing it like old school, like how you write a paper in class. And I'm like writing the outline. I'm going off the top of the head and everything like that. And I start putting this book together. I'm telling my dad about it. And he's like, you don't know about writing. And I'm like, but I got to write this book because I feel like it's going to help me be fair. It's going to be therapeutic for me. And maybe somebody else, but that's it. That's the only thought I had, maybe somebody else. It was more so trying to help me work through some things I was dealing with. And I wrote the book, and after that, I didn't even really push it like that, but it started getting in the hands of a lot of people, and people were like, I want you to come tell your story. Not only was I not a writer, but I wasn't a motivational speaker. Like, I was very outgoing, but I didn't do the motivational speaking thing. So I was, like, turning stuff down, but they were like, come on, come speak, and I would just share the story. But when I share a story like this, and it's my own story, I'm so passionate, you know, with this thing that, like, I started captivating audiences, and people were standing up testifying, guys and girls, you know, older and younger, were testifying. The audience was growing, and people were, like, crying, and, I mean, it was crazy. And it was one particular time is when I realized it was no longer about me, and probably never was about me. You know, it's probably just, you know, well, not probably, for sure, was God using me as a vessel. But I was in Newport News, Virginia, speaking, and this guy stood up with a hardened face, and he was like, I just got out of jail not too long ago, and I don't never stand up and speak in front of people, and I never cried in front of anybody. But he was like, you got me, like, in tears over here. And he was like, I don't know my father. And the reason I've been going out of jail and dealing with gangs and violence and anger and all this other stuff, is because I don't know my dad. You know, I need a dad there. And then we talked. The whole audience was crying. A lot of people stood up and shared their testimony.
And that day I said, okay, I mean, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I said, okay, this is no longer about me. I said, this is about me helping other people. And I was so glad that I wrote the book at that point. So that became my motivation. Even though the book was already written, my motivation was now to uplift people that are dealing with fatherlessness. And it just so happened that same day, I met these two guys that said that they do stage plays. And I turned them down three times. I was like, I don't know anything about stage plays. But they kept pushing and pushing and pushing. They bought my book. We started working on a cast and script, scripts and doing casting. And I'm looking like, where is God trying to take me here? Because all I wanted to do was write a book for myself. And next thing you know, it's like I'm going all over the place traveling. I got a pending stage play. I knew I didn't have any money for a stage play, but we were like, we're going to put it on somehow. We put it on in Tidewater area of Virginia, and we had a small response. I wanted to bring it back home to where I'm from, which is Richmond, Virginia. And I brought it back home, and no money to advertise or anything. And next thing you know, man, this thing just took a life of its own. Like, we sold our shows. People started donating to it. Like, nonprofit organizations started donating to it. Public figures, private donors. And we had money to make it travel. We got it on the news. NBC called me. CBS, ABC. I did two on ABC. And so I just started getting, exposure. And just started blowing up. And then more blessings were coming because people were coming up to me after my show saying, I'm dealing with that right now. Like young adults, it was older adults. I've even, to answer your question about my mom earlier, here's another example. I had some ladies that had to be in their 40s, late 40s, maybe early 50s, that came to me and said, listen, I have a son or daughter right now, and I have not told them about their father, somebody different than who they know. And, they were way older than my mom. You see what I'm saying? And I said, you haven't told
them?
Why not? And they tell me their reason why not. And so I immediately go in because it just hits my heart. I'm like, listen, you got to tell them. I don't care how old he is, 13, 18, 20. We go back and forth about it because they tell me their reason for not telling him. And I said, man, end of the day, it's selfish. Like, you got to let them know. And though I exchanged numbers with them, and they contacted me back. And, they contacted me back and said, since talking to you, and seeing your play and reading your book, I went ahead and told my son. And, and they keep up with me. And, some of them have said, now my son is so glad. I told him he was mad at first, but now he's met his dad. Another lady told me he's met his family. It's just been so many breakthroughs and blessings from me sharing my story. To even going further, that's just a few testimonies. But they happen in the drove every time I have a stage play. Or I do motivational speaking to the point that I just knew it was no longer about me at that point. It was more so about the masses and the people. And, all the things that's happening nowadays in society, just the elevated incarceration and the violence and everything, you usually can send that back to a big factor being no father in the home. Right? If you do the research and get the statistics, there's always no father in the home. So we can actually... I'm glad Obama has that, my brother's keeper and things going on, the fatherhood initiative, because that's where it starts. If we can fix that area in the home, a lot of this stuff will just get filtered out and it goes towards a more positive direction. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I know exactly what you mean. I like when I've read that you referred to it as the father factor. So that's what it sounds like you were just explaining, but feel free to tell everybody exactly what the father factor is a little bit more.
Yeah, I call it the father factor, it's actually referred to as the father wound. But it is the father factor because it's usually the common denominator of a lot of these negative traits that people are possessing, negative symptoms, these reactions people are having. If you were to take any of them, one out of every three young adults has grown up without a father, especially in African-American communities, one out of every three. So we want to narrow it down to that, and there's no disciplinarian in the home. There's nobody for a male or female to learn from, a male to model himself after, and a female is supposed to give her heart up to her father first. If there's no father there, she has no male role model there, and therefore, if you look up the symptoms of a young female not having a father in the home, it's usually promiscuity, maybe not trusting men, or on the flip side, giving almost every man your heart because you're looking for your father. So things like that. not having a high value, high self-esteem because of that. And for males, there's no father in the home. You know, they may go towards gangs. They may go towards violence. They harbor a lot of anger like I did. They harbor a lot of anger, and they take it out in other ways. They may, you know, have domestic violence on their girlfriends. You know, so there's so many symptoms that all resort back to the father's factor and the father wound. And so I say wound because a lot of people think that it's just young people. But that's so incorrect. It's millions of adults that are out here, 30, 40, 50, 60, just walking around with a father wound. And their wound is that I never had my father at home, whatever the case may be. Some of them are still looking. I still want him there. I want to know why he left. Why did he put his hands on my mom? Why did he do this? Why did he do that? And they still need that answer. Now, if you ask them, they're not going to tell you that because they don't know how to express that. A lot of them say, I don't need him. I don't need him. I just need my mom. But yes, you do. You need him. And if you don't need him, you need some questions answered. Even those questions answered may help you. And so
it sounds like you're talking about closure for these the children of these fatherless homes, if you will.
And you still have to send it to adults with no closure.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, this is just interesting, I have to tell you. Wow. All right. Well, hold on. If folks out there, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Now, I have with us today, he's the author of Finding Chris, My Father. And it's a book out that speaks to the lack of a father in being in the homes, and I'm sure how it influences the children or the whole family, all of the dynamics, I'm sure. So this has been turned into a play. You started the trek to look for your own father, Chris, of course, which is the title, Finding Chris, My Father. We haven't gotten to the part yet about you finding him, so we're going to get to that in just a moment. But what led you to, or how did this lead you to the work that you do currently with the social work?
It feels like it was indirectly because I like to joke with people telling that I have so many different degrees and none of them go together and none of them are in the work that I do now. So I just feel like it's a divine intervention that I end up in this field because I have an undergrad degree in mass communication, I have a master's degree in education, and I have an executive graduate certificate in business management. So none of the three are the same. And, you know, when you grow up, they teach you together and get your degrees in the same thing.
Right.
Now, fortunately, I was able to make them all work out now with what I do. But at first, I didn't have any degree in this field, and I was just working odd jobs here and there, and all of a sudden I started mentoring part-time. And when I started mentoring part-time, the mentoring was just so fulfilling working with these young adults, and as you mentor, you know, you build rapport with them, I started noticing that none of the kids that I mentor had any fathers yet. Not only that, they were coming from group homes, foster homes, you know, some of them may have had a mental health issue, or something like that. So I started, and it started just, you know, of course, touching my heart because it's what I went through. And, you know, I took a full-time job as a life skills coach working with young adults. And all of these guys I worked with were great young adults, I mean, full of potential, but they had so much baggage. And it was that father factor. I can't tell you one of them had a father, to be honest with you. I mean, I remember them all. Or if they had a father, the father was putting their hands on them, or you just being a horrible example of a father, and they were mimicking that. So I just started to really develop a passion for working with these young adults. And I said, man, it's crazy I don't have a degree in this, but I really want to pursue this. So I just started, I said, look, I just took it to God. I'm like, if you can get me, you know, whatever job I was applying to, I know the degree is asking for this, but I have this heart and this passion. If you can get me in an interview, I'll kill it. And I go in an interview, and they're like, you don't have a degree in this, but I have the experience. And I would get an interview, get the job, and I started working. I worked at the Richmond Department of Social Services. I worked as a life skills coach. I've worked as a counselor. I worked in benefits. I've just worked with youth and families for a long time. Even to the point now, I'm I've worked at the Mayor's Youth Academy. The Mayor of Richmond has a youth academy for young adults to help them to be on the right track. I was a counselor there. I worked at prison. I worked as a CO. I worked as a counselor, a youth counselor in a prison. I mean, I've worked with so many different young adults and adults that all, as I talk to them and as I have counseling groups and sessions, guess what? The father factor is a common denominator every time. And I don't even mean for it to happen like that, but it's just a real fact in life. And so now I work for the Division of Child Support Enforcement, and, of course, I hope you can guess the father not being there and is just a huge thing with the Division of Child Support Enforcement as well. And I want to be clear, it's not always the father, because we have plenty of non-custodial parents that are mothers, that are uncles, and, you know, aunts and everything. But just to keep it all the way real with you, though, it's the highest percentage is fathers not being there. And so I have a passion for it. So it falls in line with everything that I do. My degrees actually work now, because Mass Comm is just all about basically, you know, speaking and communication. I do that all the time there with my work I do with my books and plays. You know, business, I have my own LLC that I do educational workshops. I sell books. I do my plays. So the business management piece is there. And then the master's in education, I educate people all the time. I work in, you know, schools and things like that when I speak. So now I've been able to tie all my degrees in together, which is a beautiful thing. And that's something I was asking God for a long time. Now I'm able to tie them in together. So, you know, it's been great.
Well, I'll tell you, I like when I read VEW Enterprises, VIEW Enterprises, I would imagine. I love it. I thought it was such a great name.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Yes, as an entrepreneur. Now, just to go back just a little bit, because I like this information that you've just explained about really the whole subject. But what I didn't ask you is that why do you think we have so much of this prevalent in our community where we don't have the fathers present in the homes? What do you think? I'm just curious.
You know,
on your take on this.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and it will be just that. It'll be just a think, because I do not proclaim to have the answer, and I like to just have open discussion and awareness, because I don't have the answer. And I actually had somebody tell me on another interview I did recently. They were saying that it goes back to slavery, and I said, man, you know, I didn't even think about it that far back. You know, I'm only thinking about what I see, and, you know, going back to what I, you know, what I've encountered and stuff like that. But it broke it down to me saying that, you know, go back to slavery and, you know, and the men being stripped away from the families and, you know, losing their sense of pride and things like that. And that was an interesting perspective. So in answering your question, it'll only be just a perspective of what I think. But my answer to that is just that I believe that a lot of our men nowadays have not been taught and have forgotten what it's like to be kings and to fulfill our purpose that God designed for us. And I say that to say, you know, God didn't design for these broken families. You know, God designed for man and woman to be in the family and for the man to be the provider, the protector, and, you know, just the king in the home. You know what I mean? And I don't mean king in any type of, like, I rule everything, you know, you have no say type thing. But you know what I mean, just a king. Like, you taking care of the home, you making sure everybody's straight, the kids straight, you praying over the family, things like that. And so when men started to stray from that role that is designed for them, now everything breaks apart. Keep in mind, it's just my opinion, but I believe that everything breaks apart. So now you got these amazing women that have to step up outside of their role and have to play both sides. The woman now has to play father and definitely be the mother. So they're designed to be nurturing and do all those great things, but they're not designed to be the top provider like a man is supposed to be. They're not designed to be the protector like a man is supposed to be. Now, they do a great job at it, and they raise kings, you know, even like me. I was raised by a woman that did it. But the thing about it is like, imagine if it stayed like the way God designed it. Imagine if that happened. I just don't think we have these incarcerated brothers. I don't think we have these guys on unemployment and these, you know, guys in the project and these guys committing different types of crimes. If we had men that were stepping up and being who God designed them to be. And so that's where I am with it. I just want to raise kings. I want to let these men know that, hey, listen, before you think you ain't nothing and before you think this all I'm ever going to be is, you know, whatever you're doing, this crimes or whatever, you actually are designed to be much more. But nobody told you. You know what I mean? Nobody set an example for you to know that you're supposed to be that. And the only way I knew it is that my mom told me, and then my faith in God and matured. But I didn't have nobody to take my eyes upon and see that. You know what I mean? I had my grandfather that was there. He was a great example. So I think he helped too, but he died when I was younger. But I didn't have a father that was supposed to be there to say, hey, son, don't do that. That's leading you down the wrong path. Hey, do this, do that. Look at me. And, you know, so I don't think it's just fatherhood either. To go on a little different subject, I think it also is about relationships too. A lot of men can't really perform in the proper way in the relationship, and that's why we cheat and we do this and that. Because imagine if we had that father in the home that not only did those things I spoke about earlier as far as protecting, but imagine if you a young man and you see your daddy treating your mom like a queen, like he holding doors. He, you know, getting her what she needs. He takes care of her when she's hurting. He talks to her, communicate with her. He only has one wife, one woman. When you grow up, you're going to want to mimic that. But on the flip side, in reality, we got a lot of guys out there not being home. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? They got different women that they're bringing in and out of their life. Sometimes even they tell their son, hey, don't say nothing. You know what I mean? So just keeping it real. So imagine you got that. That's what you see. And you're going to exemplify that negative characteristic later on, and then you out here being a player just like Papa was. You know what I'm saying? So it all stems back to that father factor, but it's not just about fatherhood. It's about what example are we setting, and it's basically based on what our parents set. You see what I'm saying? So I got
yes, completely. Wow. Well, Vincent, I have to ask you. Now, if someone, let's take a look, if someone is going through the same situation that you've been through. And as you mentioned earlier, we did talk a little bit about this, but what advice would you give to someone now who is finding out that someone who they thought was their father now is not their father? Speak to that a little bit, if you would. Just what advice would you tell that person? What would the Vincent now say to the Vincent then?
That actually happened to me. So I'll give you a real example. That happened. I went to my alma mater, Norfolk State, in April, and I spoke on the panel. And I spoke about my story, so I didn't touch my father. This kid came up to me. He waited in line for a long time, and he had a screw face on when he came up to me. And he started talking to me. He was like, man, your story is so real. Like, you actually have lived what I'm currently going through. And I had to elaborate. He said, I don't know my father. You know, and I just found out who he is. I found him on Facebook, and he said, I reached out to him, but he doesn't want to talk to me. And his face just got tighter and tighter as he was talking to me. And I said, well, first of all, I said, you got to release that anger that you got going on right now. He's like, I'm not angry. I said, nah, it's on your face. I see it. And so I said, you got to release this anger. He's like, well, he should have did this and this. I said, look, you know I know. You know I know, because I was you at 16. I was very angry, and you couldn't even mention father to me because I snapped. And so he kind of loosened up, and we talked, and he was like, I don't think I need to meet him. I said, hey, I only reached out. I said, but see, this is the thing. You reached out because you do need to meet him. It's something inside of you that yearns to hear from him. I told him, I said, you know what, your outcome may not be as great as mine was, just realistically speaking. I said, he could be a bum, or he could just be dead. He could be, you know, a regular guy. You just never know. But the thing is, you still need to hear from him and have that time to dialogue with him. Because of that closure piece that you mentioned earlier, even if you meet him and he says straight up, I don't want nothing to do with you, it's going to hurt, but you at least got an answer from him. Or you might meet him and he said, oh, my God, I never knew about you. You see what I'm saying? So when I told him all of that, he was nodding and listening, and it was breaking walls down as I was telling him. And he said, I never thought about it like that. I said, right. And when I was 16, nobody broke it down to me like that. But I now know, as an older gentleman now, I know that there's always another side to the story. It don't mean the side is great, but I'm just saying you need to hear from him. I said, listen, reach out to him, remove the animosity, find a way, whether it be, you know, pray to whoever you believe in or just go to a quiet place, but remove the animosity so you can't come to him with that, because then he's going to turn away. And I was like, you got to also remember, too, he might be feeling guilty as well. Don't think he's just staying away because he's staying away. he might say, I messed up in the first 5 years, but now it's already been 5 years on. I might as well stay away another five because I feel so guilty. I wasn't there for the first five. I just said, see, you gotta ask him why. You know what I mean? You gotta hear the answer from him. And you know, he was against it at first, but as I kept talking, me and him exchanged numbers too. This is a real story. And he kept texting me periodically, giving me updates. But you know his most recent text? This is no lie.
What's that?
Hand to God. He said, Vincent, I just want to keep in touch with you like I told you I would. He said, I'm going to meet my dad at this next week or something like that, next week. He said, I'm kind of nervous, but I'm excited too because we talked on Facebook. I let him talk. I didn't come at him like in a negative way. And now I'm about to meet him for the first time. And he said, I would never even go to meet him had I not met you. And so my advice to young people that are dealing with this is that, you know, you got to face your fears. You got to at least try to have an adult conversation with this person, even if you're mad at them or whatnot. Have open communication with them. I think it's going to help as far as exposure. It's going to help with their anger. And not always anger. Sometimes it just confuses you. It's going to help with those question marks floating around your head. Who is he? What did he do? Why did he walk away? Why did he stay? And on the real, it might have been something, you know, your mom did. See, there's so many different variables to this that you can't just go on what your mom said. You can't just go on what your thoughts are. You got to hear all the different sides. So that's what I
would
say.
Well, I think, sure. Thank you very much. Now, I think this is a great point for us to kind of go back to your story. So you had been searching and searching. You know, you were told that the person you thought was your father all this time was not your father. And he was incarcerated, this person you thought was your father. And you had all kinds of feelings of frustration for different levels and so forth and so on. And you found out your mother had told you what turned out to be something false a time or two regarding the person you thought was your father. How did it all come to be that you actually moved closer to discovering Chris, your father?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, it was actually by happenstance. And, you know, this is kind of like the climax in the book, really, but it was like happenstance.
Ending of the book. Do not give us the ending of Finding Chris, My Father, because we want to pick up the book. So we're gonna park it when we get real close to that point because I want to make sure everybody gets this book, including myself. I think it's a great idea. It's a great subject, and we'll talk more about it. But I'll let you finish because I really like this idea.
Yeah. So and I'll stop right before that. So what happened is like you know I graduated from college and I'm just going on with life. Like I go get my undergrad degree, I get my master's. And I'm doing what I call masking, which is where, like, I'm able to put on this mask like everything's fine. And, you know, it's partially going great, you know, career and degree and whatnot, but there's this piece that's missing. But I keep in mind we had no information. So I literally didn't hear anything about, you know, a Chris or anybody at that point from, you know, graduating undergrad till, you know, in my later 20s. And like I said, I don't want to give away the story, so this is the part I have to stop at. But I will just tell you this. I ended up meeting him, but when I tell you the story, it's crazy. Like, it's just so unbelievable. Y'all got to get the book, Finding Chris, My Father, I'm telling you. Well, you can get it on Amazon.com. So you just go to Amazon, and you know, you can type it, Finding Chris, My Father. It's on Kindle and paperback. It's also, I mean, it's on a lot of sites, you know, it's on BarnesandNoble.com, things like that, but Amazon's probably the most popular place that everybody goes to. So it's there. You know, you can definitely follow me on social media because I update everything on there. It's links to the book, excerpts and play stuff, so, I mean, motivational speaking engagement. And so I'm on Facebook, my name is Vincent Ellis White. I'm on Instagram, Vincent Ellis White, and Twitter is Vince Ellis White. So definitely follow me on there, but get the book on Amazon.com, man. Find it quick. I guarantee you'll love it. I want to tell you, too, not only is it a travel stage play and God just keeps expanding my audience, but I recently had a Hollywood producer take a strong interest in it and option my book. And what that means is that they say they want to turn the book into a stage play. So my book has been optioned. I'm sorry, not stage play, excuse me, into a film. So my book was an option to be turned into a motion picture. So, I mean, I'm still taking options, though. So, I mean, I'm always looking for another option to see what, you know, the best offer is and whatnot. But I was just shocked because I never in my dreams would I imagine a story that I looked at as a bad thing would turn out to be blessing so many people and creating awareness. But also, it can ultimately become a film which can hit the theaters and bless the masses and things like that. So it's just a beautiful thing, man.
It sounds like a very beautiful thing. And on that note, I have to say, what in closing might you share with the folks out there for whatever they're going through, Mr. Vincent Ellis White? What would you say to folks? Because apparently, and you've been dealing with a lot of families on so many different issues, and usually that's relating to this, the father factor or fatherless factor, if you will. What kind of advice would you give overall? Or what's your closing thought on folks who are going through things these days as it relates to the family?
Yeah, no problem. My closing thoughts would just be, man, it's really about having hope and being encouraged and being uplifted. You know, man, life, I ain't gonna let nobody tell you life is easy. Like, life is tough. We go through something that we think is the toughest thing in the world. Then 6 months later, we go through something even tougher. So we got to have hope. We have to be encouraged, be uplifted. The thing that saved me was everything from my faith to having mentors. You know, I was in the Boys and Girls Club. I had some strong, positive, you know, male role models there. But now, even as an older man, when I get down, I can have positivity around me. So I tell everybody, man, no matter what you're going through, find some people, some positivity that you can just surround yourself with. It's like a big hug, like, and surround yourself with positivity, people that's going to lift you up. Because, you know, if you're already on the verge of breaking, you don't need to be around on negativity. I stay around people that lift me up. That will give you that hope that you need. You know, hopefully, if you're a person of faith, man, just go to that, let that faith build and understand that, you know, whatever the enemy has meant for bad, God can turn around for good. And that's just really what I float on right there. Like, I always think about it. I was like, oh, my God, this situation is so bad. And that's what I'm thinking about at the time. But then, like, a year or two later, I'm looking back, and it's just that situation turned into something so good. And I'm looking back like, you know, how did that even happen? But if I never had hope, I don't know that I would have got there. So anybody that's listening, no matter if you're going through, your father not being there, your mother putting your hands on you, everybody's on drugs in your family except you, you don't have no money, no car, whatever is going on, understand that that's a valley. It's only for a moment. And that moment could be 20 years. But I'm just saying it's only for a moment. You need to have hope, be encouraged, and understand that you can and will get out that situation. Have faith and surround yourself with the right people. Connect with the right people, and you know you're gonna have a breakthrough and get out of situation. You're not designed to be in that turmoil forever. And so, you know, I believe that you'll all get out of it as long as you have faith and have hope.
Wow. Well, on that note, I want to thank Mr. Vincent Ellis White. Vincent, thank you so much for being with us on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Just your message, getting out there, you are transforming folks' lives today. So thank you so much. And again, the book is Finding Chris, My Father. It's a play. It's going to be out there. You're going to be just, you can get it off Amazon.com and so many other places. And we're just so excited to have you with us, and we want you to come back and let us know, continue to let us know how you progress in reaching folks out there with your message.
Thank you. I appreciate it, you having me on your show, and I appreciate every listener that's listening. You know, I hope that I was able to motivate everybody. Once again, go get my book, Finding Chris, My Father, on Amazon.com. Also, if any of your listeners are in the New York City area, I'll be in New York City on several different outlets, from ABC to News to doing, you know, some talk shows. I'll be in New York City, I think, June 7th through the 11th. So you'll see me on a couple shows there. Just follow me on social media to see where I'm going to pop up at. But I appreciate everybody. I definitely appreciate you, sir. Thank you very much.
You got it. Vincent, I'm going to have you to remain on the line. And, folks, I'm going to talk to you guys. We're going to we'll be right back. So just stay with us. There's a lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to come. Stay with us, everybody.
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
But radio commercials as much as they do television commercials?
Maybe more so.
How do you figure that?
Well, in television, your tube goes minutes just before the commercial comes on.
Yeah?
That serves as a warning device to millions of people that they have a split second to get out of the room.
I never thought of that.
In radio, an advertiser can just sort of sneak up on you without any warning.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you haven't noticed your car radio suddenly fading to black before the commercial, have you?
And not recently, no. But can't you still walk out when the radio commercial comes on?
Not at 60 miles an hour.
Okay, but do you think you can really make me pay attention to a radio commercial?
I just did.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. Yes, I'm Carrie Hines. It's Thursday morning, April 7th of 2022, and it is my great honor to welcome you guys to this part of the broadcast. Of course, I want to bring to the line a gentleman who's been kind of helping me earlier each day right here on the broadcast to keep things moving along. Today's no exception. A pleasure to welcome back Otto Automatic IT right here. Otto, good morning, and happy Thursday.
Good morning, Gary. Happy Thursday to you.
Yes, I want to say that it is a throwback Thursday, and we're going to talk about it. You know, throwback Thursday, before we got on the air, I was telling Otto, I said, you know, it's hashtag CBT, hashtag throwback Thursday, but for a lot of you folks who may not be on social media and not that much into it, several years ago, I don't know how long it's been, every Thursday, folks post old classic pictures of themselves. And so we've taken that to a different level here on the Hair Radio Morning Show by playing some classic songs. We opened up today's broadcast with funk queen Chaka Khan. And her group was called Rufus back in, we're not going to say quite how far back, but let's say it was a few decades ago. But anyway, Chaka Khan is still going strong out there. Let me just be the first to say that. And so we love her here at the Hair Radio Morning Show. So good morning, Otto Automatic. Good morning, Otto. No, let me just bring everybody up to speed a little bit more on you as well. You are not here in Brooklyn, New York, where I am broadcasting from. You are where?
In Hamilton, New Jersey.
Hamilton, New Jersey. Well, let me just say this. I will actually be doing a live, hosting a live event in your neck of the woods. And it's on May 6th. It's a Friday night from 6 to 10. I'll be down there in a place called Willingboro, New Jersey. Willingboro, New Jersey. There's some wonderful groups from way back in the classic days. There are two groups. One is called the Delphonics, and one is called the Blue Notes. And I'll be the host for you for that evening. One of my great friends is a promoter for that, and asked if I could help her out with duties on stage, and I'll be happy to do so. And so if you're in the area, now had you heard of Willingboro, New Jersey?
Absolutely, yes. It's about 20 minutes south of here, maybe 15, 20 minutes south of here. It's a very nice community, yes.
Oh, awesome. Well, Otto, you guys know, it's crazy, you know, from folks who tune into the radio show, to the Hair Radio Morning Show, and they think that we're all like, you know, in the New York, New Jersey, that we know it. But see, up here in this part of New York, that's about 3 hours from me in a car, I think. About 2 and a half hours.
Two hours.
I don't know. It's a distance.
Yes.
What do you think? Yeah, it's about two and a half hours, something like that. But and it's not far. It's near Philadelphia. So that's my original home, and so I'm looking forward to it. I got to tell everybody I'll be there. So drop on in May 6th.
That's exciting. I'm looking forward to that. Steve Curry Hines live.
Yeah.
That'd be me. Great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So, absolutely. Well, I'm thrilled. You know, plus I have my own live events that we'll talk a little bit more about in the weeks to come. So it's a lot going on at Hair Radio. Otto, how about yourself? What's going on down there in your neck of the woods? Speaking of from Willingboro area and all of that.
It's going good, Curry. It's a little dreary today, but that's expected in April. April showers do bring May flowers.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know,
that's the same thing up here. It's really, you know, and not expecting the weather to shape up anytime soon. We'll talk a little bit more and get our weather reports back on and for next week's shows. So just wanted to give you guys that update. Hey, let me also tell you, there's something else that we haven't talked a whole lot about on the show live, but Upscale Radio. And I want to kind of break it on down what Upscale Radio is and is all about. And so, first of all, there is the Legendary Magazine. And this magazine, Upscale Magazine, has been around for over 30 years, like 34 years. They're celebrating a big, big, big anniversary of that, of the magazine in August of this year. So I am so proud to be connected with this incredible historical publication in the Black homes. In terms of print magazines, and we're talking about magazines that you actually go to a newsstand and buy, this magazine is still sold on the newsstands from coast to coast. It's one of just two magazines that are targeted to the African-American community that's still sold on the newsstands. One is Essence Magazine, and the other is Upscale Magazine. And so I'm so proud to be connected with Upscale and to help them and to push them and continue their journey and our journey and kind of merge it all together. So we're real excited. So Upscale Radio, I've been working quietly on developing their own 24-hour, 7-day-a-week radio network. And so I'm real happy about that. And I think this is awesome. What does it sound like to you, Otto Magic?
I'm looking forward to the Upscale Radio Network.
You sound like you disappeared, Otto. Are you there?
Yes, I am here. Hello?
Oh, okay. Yes, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay,
so, yeah,
sorry.
How does that sound?
Good. How are you?
Good. Yeah. So in terms of the magazine, I don't know if you heard that, but we'll be kicking off their radio network real soon. And so we want to just tell our fans of the Hair Radio Morning Show that you'll have two or more places. I mean, we're already all over the internet, but I'm super excited because we get to the Hair Radio Morning Show will also be carried over on their 24-hour network each day. So it's really, really nice. So lots of things to come down the pike.
Yeah, that's a long longevity magazine. I still see it on the shelves today. It's amazing that, you know, with the times and, you know, internet and things, but the magazine still pushes on.
Yes. Well, folks, listen, we are going to – I've got some special things we're going to get on the air. I've got a lot more talk to get to this morning. But first, just a little bit of information on some of the wonderful things we've been doing here over the years. And this is one of my favorite ones that we've played. And this is the incredible story that you guys know of Madam C.J. Walker. It's about 10 minutes. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
One in a Million, the history of Madam C.J. Walker and her entrepreneurial legacy. Not even her poor and difficult beginnings stymied Madam Walker's road to greatness. Born December 23, 1867, roughly 2 years after the alleged emancipation of her race, She was an orphan at 7, a wife at 14, a mother at 17, and a widow by 20. The woman who would become known as the first self-made female millionaire and the greatest benefactress of her race was born the daughter of Owen and Minerva Breedlove, poor ex-slaves living on a cotton farm in Louisiana. They named their special little girl Sarah Breedlove. A washerwoman by trade, at the age of 33 in 1900, Sarah began selling a product door to door which she had formulated to remedy her own hair loss. She pinpointed the root of her hair problems, which was the scalp, and created hair care products and a beauty regimen for hair growth and maintenance that focused on the need for a clean and healthy scalp, scalp protection, and scalp stimulation for maximum hair growth. Her first product would eventually be called Madam C.J. Walker's Wonderful Hair Grower, and she boldly and proudly used her own likeness on her jars and her own before and after pictures to demonstrate her product's effectiveness. Per Madam's own words, she abhorred the impression held by some that she claimed to straighten hair. She emphatically stated, "I grow hair," and that there would be no hair-growing business today had I not started it. She described her concept and method of hair growth as beauty culture because she compared growing hair to growing and cultivating garden plants. She then broadened this concept of beauty culture by incorporating the value of cleanliness and professionalism, which emphasized the overall appearance, moral conduct, and character of the Black woman. Black women from all over the country began writing letters to Madam Walker attesting to the benefits of her products. By setting up a special correspondence course of beauty culture in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and then a manufacturing facility in Indiana, and later a beauty college in New York City, Madam was able to further establish and promulgate her program of beauty culture, which trained the Black female in three areas. First, the Black woman was taught the proper presentation of herself. She was to be clean, neat, properly attired, and well-mannered. Second, she was taught how to use Madam's hair care system on customers. And third, she was taught how to sell Madam's hair care products to customers. In so doing, Madam C.J. Walker provided a solution to the root of the Black woman's demise. She raised the Black woman's self-esteem and confidence about her own beauty and intelligence, and she empowered the Black woman economically, thus freeing her from white servitude and male dependency. This accomplishment is even more amazing when put in the context of the time in which these things were done and in the context of Madam's own background. The time, one historian called the nadir, or lowest point in the history of the Black race, outside of slavery itself. The blessings of freedom was now marred by the blatant terrorist acts of the Ku Klux Klan and those like-minded individuals working in collusion with them. The harsh reality faced by the vast majority of Blacks living in this era was that the number of lynchings peaked during the early 1900s, as did other backlashes sparked by Reconstruction, such as the burning of Black churches and schools and the establishment of Jim Crow laws. During this dark period, most Black women were either sharecroppers or washerwomen and house servants for whites. Madam Walker was no exception, but she was, however, exceptional. Madam Walker moved her ever-expanding special correspondence course business, founded on her system of beauty culture, to Indianapolis, Indiana, on February 19, 1910. She then purchased and paid for her home, adjoining which was a factory and laboratory, located at 640 North West Street. She endeared herself to the citizens of Indianapolis when she contributed $1,000 to the establishment of the Senate Avenue YMCA. It is reported that she was the only woman to make such a donation. Madam herself, when referring to the YMCA donation, had this to say, Quote, in referring to that $1,000 gift, I don't want you to lay so much stress on it, and do not say that I'm the only one. You might say that I was the first and caused others to awaken to the sense of their duty in helping deserving causes for the benefit of the race. End quote. Not long after her move to Indianapolis, Madam Walker also became a member of Bethel AME Church, one of the oldest and most influential churches in the black community, to which Madam Walker contributed generously. In less than 2 years after moving to Indianapolis, on September 2, 1911, Madam C.J. Walker petitioned the Indiana Secretary of State to become incorporated, and on September 19, 1911, exactly 1 year and 7 months since her arrival in Indianapolis, the Madam C.J. Walker Manufacturing Company of Indiana Incorporated was established, Madam Walker naming herself president and owner of all 1,000 shares of stock. A relentless worker and ingenious marketer and saleswoman, Madam Walker had thought to place her system of hair care products in black colleges all across the United States. She also regularly advertised in black newspapers, and she eventually placed her products in drugstores. As she traveled throughout the country, she wrote letters to her general manager in order to instruct him on how best to run her factory in her absence and how to implement all of her new ideas. However, the Madam Walker agents, Madam's recruited sales force, were her biggest asset. Madam held public meetings in churches, rented lodge halls and other such facilities, and put on demonstrations, including a slide presentation, in order to recruit black women to become Walker agents. Madam Walker taught and trained them in the methods of application and proper use of her hair oils and vegetable shampoo. Eventually, Madam organized a national convention for her Walker agents, giving away prizes and other incentives to motivate and energize her ever-growing troops of Walker agents. Sales generated from Madam Walker's manufacturing company and the hair care products it produced enabled Madam to give birth to yet another legacy, as Madam became known as the greatest benefactress of her race. Through monies earned and derived from Madam's work in the hair-growing business, Madam Walker regularly donated large sums of money to charity and to individuals of her race who were in need. In fact, Madam was so self-sacrificing and freely giving that those closest to her were worried that she would become financially ruined. Desiring all blacks to have decent homes, at times, Madam would assume mortgages of blacks who were financially strapped, allowing them to repay when and how they could. Various schools for blacks and certain social and civic organizations dedicated to the betterment of the black race were also beneficiaries of Madam's philanthropy. Though many have called Madam extravagant, her generosity and passion for her people were Madam's only extravagances. She gave not for self-aggrandizement, but rather to inspire other wealthy blacks to give likewise. Moreover, Madam's giving went well beyond monetary donations. She lent her name and time to worthy causes. She traversed the country, speaking against lynchings, and fought vehemently for the fair treatment of black soldiers who had served in America's military during World War I. Madam C.J. Walker was an ambassador of sorts, a spokesperson for all black-skinned people, a revolutionary, visionary, missionary force. It should therefore be quite obvious that Madam Walker's passing on May 25, 1919, was a tremendous loss to the black race. At that time, Madam had recruited over 25,000 black women from the United States, Central America, and the Caribbean as door-to-door beauty culturists and was well on her way to Africa. Her net worth was over $1 million, making her the first female, regardless of color, to become a self-made millionaire. She is one of the most successful black entrepreneurs of all time and one of the first to utilize the method known today as direct sales marketing to distribute her products. She had also managed to build a 32-room mansion in Irvington, New York, called Villa Loaro, which she had desired to be left as a monument to her name and as an example to her race of what hard work and black support of black enterprises could achieve. After Madam's 1919 passing, her hair care manufacturing corporation was used as collateral to secure the finances needed to build what is today known as the Madam Walker Theater Building. Completed in late 1927, the Walker Building Beauty Salon continues to operate there and continues to sell Madam C.J. Walker's original hair care products. Years later, in 1982, the trustees of Madam Walker's trust would deposit a large portion of Madam C.J. Walker Manufacturing Company's business records, historical documents, pictures, and memorabilia with the Indiana Historical Society, who took on the task of painstakingly organizing and preserving the Madam Walker legacy. 74 years after the incorporation of the Madam Walker Company in 1985, the 1,000 shares of capital stock of Madam's corporation were sold to a man named Raymond L. Randolph, making him the first person since Madam Walker herself to own all 1,000 shares of stock in the original Madam Walker Company. A graduate of Attucks High School, Mr. Randolph had never dreamed that he would become the owner and caretaker of this phenomenal legacy. In honor of Madam C.J. Walker, Mr. Randolph placed Madam Walker's image back on the jars of her original hair care products with the words, "Since 1911," placed underneath it. Doing business today as Madam C.J. Walker Enterprises Incorporated, the hair care company founded by Madam C.J. Walker continues to manufacture and sell her original quality products, ensuring that the legacy of this remarkable woman never dies. The Madam Walker Agent Program has been reinstituted and is the main method by which her products are distributed today. On September 24, 2011, Madam C.J. Walker Enterprises sponsored a centennial celebratory walk called Tracing the Footsteps of a Legacy. This event marked the 100th year since the pivotal point in her entrepreneurial legacy when Madam Walker incorporated her manufacturing company, the Madam C.J. Walker business family, which includes the Madam Walker agents, will continue to keep Madam Walker's spirit alive and well by ensuring that her labor of love, her manufacturing business, continues operating according to the entrepreneurial blueprint she left behind and which is detailed in the historical documents of the company. Thank you. Thank you, Sarah Breedlove. You are indeed one in a million.
Welcome to the fantasy.
Hi, everybody. It's Carrie Hines. And in honor of our 600th episode celebration, we're playing some of our classic interviews and sharing some behind-the-scenes stories right here at the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, the Hair Radio Morning Show has chronicled our lives, mixing great hair and beauty talk with current events and shaping each broadcast with music and special guests. I want to thank you and to our amazing sponsors and advertisers. Now, let's take a listen back together. Well, all right. Yes, that was me about 100 episodes ago. We're now approaching our 700th live show. And I am so honored. I really am. Let me just get Otto on. Otto, again, you know, I just wanted to listen back to that for a quick moment. In this last year, so from April of last year, 2021, to April of 2022, I've done about 150 live three-hour shows.
That's a lot of shows,
that's
Gary.
A lot. Yeah. Is that not amazing?
It is amazing.
So, yeah, it's closing in on 700 mornings. 700. 700 shows. That I'm getting up early. I've literally gotten up and been on the air with you for 700 mornings. Mm. And so that is just, it's a wonderful thing that I treasure and take to heart. I really do. And so just to tell folks a little bit more about that. So Otto, this is what's happening. Our 700th live show, the big announcement, will be on Tuesday, April 19th, Tuesday of April 19th of 2022. That's the date that we will be celebrating our 700th live show.
Looking forward to it.
Yes, it's going to be live, wall to wall. So we're in. You know, going to be talking back about some memories, talking over some other things, looking ahead some, playing some of the highlights from our different shows. We started celebrating our broadcast, I think way back when I did our 50th show back in 2015. I did our, 50th show, and we celebrated that. And at that time, I remember I didn't even think I could, would be on the air like this but here's one of the celebration shows, a clip from one of the celebration shows that I did. I had these two incredible women who joined me. I started the show back in 2015, as you guys know, in January 5th to be exact. And maybe about 2 weeks later, they weren't right there at the beginning, but the two ladies joined me about 10 days in on the show, and they kind of just would help out, join in talking. One of them used to babysit her little her grandchild, and you could hear the grandchild in the background and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was really whatever we could take to get folks on. You got to remember, this was 7 years ago, and most folks had never heard of a Hair Radio morning show. Hair Radio had been on, over the years on AM, FM, and different times. We're a nighttime show and all that other stuff. But this was the launch of a morning broadcast, waking up with folks 3 hours each morning. That was the thing. And I'm super, super excited that we've been able to, to stay this amount of time at it. That's just an incredible feat all by itself. So I really had a great time. And I have to honestly say I'm going to see if I can find it. It was literally like our 50th time, kind of celebrating right here on the show, because it was, again, it just didn't happen all that much like that, where there was something like this already out there.
And so I'm grateful to be here, still doing the Hair Radio Morning Show. 7 years in and 700th broadcast. It's kind of like we've averaged about 100 broadcasts a year when I broke it all down. Right. But what's really interesting, though, is that I think I skipped about a year. I think I skipped about a year or very close to a year in my 7 years. I took off almost a year. And, you know, just decided to take, like, in education arena, they would call it a sabbatical. I just took some time off and some time away. And, you know, and I have to honestly say, but it's really, really nice to be. You know, I came back literally almost to the day. So about 1 week short of a year and came back to broadcasting. So in my 7 years that I did the show, I skipped a year. And we still have produced 700 broadcasts. So
yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. So I'm grateful to still be doing it and going strong these days. We have been doing some amazing things. I want to shout out to all the folks who listen every day. I want to take a moment to acknowledge our listeners from all over the world, every corner of the earth. We have amazing fans of this show. Catherine Rondebel, who you guys have heard right here on the show, she's down in Australia, has just been an incredible supportive person. Real happy about that and her amazing headbed creation that she developed. To our friends in Ghana, West Africa, Nigeria, our friends up in Egypt, down in South Africa, and over in East Africa, the entire continent, we appreciate your support, and thank you for tuning in. Of course, it goes without saying, but we're going to say it anyway. We love our fans all across America, the continent of North America. We love the folks up in Canada. We love everybody. We appreciate South America as well. We appreciate all of you guys, and we love that you're tuning in. Our fans from the West Coast to the East Coast, North and South here in the United States, we love that you tune in. We appreciate you. We have a big fan base in Southern California. We have a big fan base in Atlanta. We have a big fan base out in the Northeast. Of course, I'm here in New York, so we have lots of folks right here who tune in to our broadcast and contribute. Now, if you're just kind of joining us, you might have missed some of the highlights from today. And I don't know if you had a chance to hear, Otto, but we kicked off this morning with Vincent Ellis White and Jorge. Jorge and his girlfriend, Naomi. Jorge has been dealing with autism for a long time. And autism is this real tough, it's an infliction. I feel really badly because it's not something that you can just see in another person. It's really kind of on the inside. And when I first met Jorge, yes, and I was totally unaware of, you know, I just thought that autism was like, you know, everything else. And I learned a lot about it, and I encourage you to Google and read about it. You can't just lump everybody who is autistic into one little barrel. There's a whole spectrum that they kind of, you know, range, rate people on and all of that. But he was great on the show. And you guys can see, if you Google us, we have a video that's out there as well and on my YouTube channel, my Kerry Hines YouTube channel on Hair Radio YouTube, that you'll see Jorge. He's been, we've done some on-camera stuff as well. And so real good stuff. Then we went on to Vincent Ellis White. And Otto, did you hear about that? That was Finding Chris, My Father. He's written a book. And,
yes.
Was that interesting? He takes you on a search for his dad. How sad, you know, how interesting is that?
Yes, it actually impacted me. I've been on both sides. My father, unfortunately, was killed at work when I was a young boy.
Oh, sorry.
And then I could really follow Chris. I thought he was an inspirational speaker, and I'm looking forward to purchasing the book to find out more.
Yeah.
And his journey, yes, with his stepfathers and different things. It's an amazing. I'm looking forward to more knowledge from Chris Vincent, and it was just a really, really knowledgeable segment. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you, did you have someone else, another, you know, like a stepdad or someone, another male role model that you could turn to, kind of like a surrogate dad, since your dad, you know, got awful, you lost him early on?
Right. Yeah, later on, my mother was a single mother for years, which back in the 60s
wow.
was kind of not, you know, not, you know, kind of not as prevalent as today. And
right.
I call, like yourself, understandably why they call you a pioneer in the hair radio industry, my mother was also a pioneer in single motherhood. And later on, she did meet a gentleman, and, you know, she got remarried. But I was older at that point, and I had already forged, you know, my different ideas. And so it was difficult. It's a difficult it's a difficult subject. Everybody is individual. You know, some people enjoy their stepfather. Some have bad experiences. I think it's an
right,
individual
exactly.
journey.
Wow. Well, I take my hat off to you just for sharing your story this morning, because there's so many folks who are in the same boat, literally. And it's just remarkable. It really is. And my heart goes out. And again, this is stuff that we've dealt with as well. We've dealt with things, you know, we've had to kind of navigate our way. I take my hat off, if I may, to a lot of the single moms that are out there who have held it down, literally, you know, keeping us, you know, fed and doing all kinds of things, you know, having to make a way when it didn't, you didn't know how they were going to make a way, you know. So
yeah.
I take my hat off to a lot of the single moms. I think it's incredible.
Yeah. If you're fortunate enough to be in the home with the children, you know, that's great for the, you know, teaching a boy, you know, how to have pride, discipline, encourage, you know, encourage them to be a man, and the daughters look up to the father. So if you can't, and it's in, you know, it's a situation where you can't be involved, I still believe, you know, you're way more than a paycheck and a visitor. You know, you have to stay in
wow.
these children's life and always make them feel that they're never alone. You know, I always tell my
wow.
children, I'm a phone call away. And stay
wow.
in their
well,
life.
Yeah, and you stay in their lives. That, you know, that's what I'm getting from this. And I think that's why I put on the Finding Chris, My Father this morning, to be reminded how important a father is. This young man, he went chasing all around for his dad. And whatever his mom told him, he believed. And his mother largely had made up quite a bit of, you know, the different story and things you know, we don't know why she did or to shield him. Sometimes it's to shield the child, you know, from whatever or who knows. You know what I mean? It's not, we don't know why, you know, things are kind of, you know, happen the way that they do about stuff like that. Parents make all kinds of decisions. And so,
right.
You know, it's just something we have to kind of, you know, it's very interesting to me. And I'm kind of, you know, moved by that kind of story. So now, Otto, I want to take a moment. You were kind enough to tell everybody you're in the south part of New Jersey, southern part of New Jersey, outside of the Philadelphia area. I myself, that's my home down there in Philadelphia. And one of the reasons for folks, let me just tell everybody, we're live this morning. So if you're just joining us, that's what you're hearing. It's April 7th of 2022. It's Thursday. It's hour show number 694. And I'm just blown away, Otto. I really am. Good stuff. Now, I have to tell folks, Otto, you are an entrepreneur, And, an entrepreneur, let me just say, is very important part of my story. Everybody knows I'm an entrepreneur, especially if you've tuned into the Hair Radio Morning Show. You figure it out real quick. But, yes, I'm an entrepreneur.
and in this space, what exactly is an entrepreneur? And I've got to take a moment to tell folks this, because as I was telling Otto one day, we were chatting, I'm like, Otto, not, you know, and you, I know you know this, being an entrepreneur yourself, and every businessman is not necessarily an entrepreneur, but every entrepreneur is a businessman. So you can run a company or be part of a company and not be an entrepreneur, of course. You might not have started the company and different reasons and things like that. And so, but the opposite is also true. Now, if you're an entrepreneur, you have to be a businessman because you've got to figure out how business works in order to be successful with your endeavor. And so I encourage everybody to follow their passion because that's what leads to success as an entrepreneur. So I am just very, very, very excited. And I also want to take a moment to tell folks a little bit more. Now, your business, and one of the reasons I love your story, Otto, is that you started your own painting company and you service folks in your community with commercial painting. So we're not just talking about, like on a canvas per se, or do you call it a canvas? How do you describe your business, Otto?
Oh, I'm a interior, exterior painter of homes and or buildings. And it's a fun, you know, business. So you're outdoors in the season, and I enjoy that. It's also, you know, thrilling to see people, you know, when their house is tired or old and you freshen it up and with crisp lines and beautiful colors. It's a good, satisfying business to help others, basically. You know, I do get paid, but it's the joy of seeing the faces that, and they're happy. And I'm dependable and honest. So dependability is very important in my business. Be there when you say you're going to be there for the estimate, show up on time, you know, just stay, maintain professionalism. That's what helps.
Wow. That Otto, you just said a mouthful right there. You literally said a mouthful, and it can be applied to any business. That's why in my book, How to Get Rich in the Hair Business that I've written, that's out there on YouTube. It's out there on Amazon. You can buy it. It's out on Amazon. But the reason that what I cover professionalism, and it's everything that we talk about here at Hair Radio. It really is. It doesn't matter if you're running a hair salon or you have your own company that you started doing commercial painting. It is important to be professional. And I think I was chatting with one of our radio hosts, just yesterday about that. You really need to be professional. It is key. But a lot of people don't know how to define professionalism. They don't know what professionalism looks like or sounds like or is like. So quite often, they're not sure how to know that they're not being professional. If no one has ever told you or taught you, you don't realize it. So some of the things that you just mentioned, Otto, are all about being professional. And so I love what you just said, because you said showing up on time for the estimate, being what, you know, being where you say you are supposed to be and doing what you told them you're going to do. Those are the things, the tenets of being professional.
Yeah, I'd say dependability is number one that I pride myself on, and also craftsmanship. You know, I'm an old school painter. I don't cheat. You know, there's the guys, you know, things out there that happen, but I was trained properly in all phases of prep. And so the job, paint only covers what's there. If you don't prep it right, it's not going to come out right. And I do, my work gets me my work. Yeah, my work gets me my work. I don't advertise, be honest. My advertisement is my work. I'm referred by family members.
Now your advertisement is on the Hair Radio Show. You're here too, Otto. We're excited to have you. So listen, we're just having a little fun. But I do love that you're an entrepreneur, that you're a hardworking, very dedicated man.
you guys got to hear this, and I don't, I think you can hear it. But I'm also moved by the fact that you take what you do seriously. And I always say to folks, you know, I had, like, one of the ladies, she said, how did you get up so early? I'm like, I get up early every day because this, I take this seriously. This is important to me. You know, when we started our radio and folks were laughing and all this stuff about the concept of ham radio, I kept on going. You know, I took it seriously in 1995. I take it seriously today in 2022. And now,
and I think a lot,
so do the, all the celebrities that have been on our show. They take it seriously, too. So, and the hairstylists, yeah.
Yeah, I find, you know, our relationship that we are similar, very similar in our approach to our careers. And I look at mine as a, you know, it's a, it was a career. I raised children on that money. So it's, and you shoulder a lot of responsibility and you pull it off and you're such a professional. I've learned so much from you and your show.
Oh, thank you, Otto. Is, that's the nicest thing. And for, and Otto, your check will be in the mail. Thank you so much for saying that. That is just wonderful. You know, and I appreciate that. I'd like to think that I'm a student too. I want to always continue to learn to be better. I strive to make our broadcast better each day. I'm working as well as I mentioned, you know, before the last song, on our, not just our 700th show, but I'm also launching a separate 24-hour radio network for our amazing partners at Upscale Magazine. So that literally will be turned on in the next day or two. And so you guys will be able to hear the Hair Radio Morning Show plus a lot of the content play out on a separate second network. And so we're getting all that. You, Otto, we're going to get you on over there as well a little bit more. And I also, before we move off this subject, Otto, I want to talk, I want to tell folks that, let me just give you my personal background with regards to the painting. And I love this concept. And that is the, you know, it's springtime and a lot of the hair salons, we are always asking, what can we do to, improve the salons? And you guys want to freshen it up? Well, we're going to talk to Otto. No, we can't talk to anybody better about doing some internal, you know, internal fixing up and painting inside and some external. Or do they say interior and exterior, I think, are the better ways to say that.
Well, when I'm a doctor, when I'm a doctor of pain, it's internal, exterior. No, it's interior, exterior. But no, I usually say that. I went on an estimate yesterday and I said, where's the patient? You know, that's how I feel.
Wow.
I'm a doctor. And everybody's home, just remind you this, everybody's home is the Ritz-Carlton, okay?
Wow.
You don't paint, you don't go into a basement thinking slap it on, it's just a basement. No, I take pride in a basement. I take pride, like you said, salons, if they have chipping, peeling, paint, you want to, you know, the curb appeal is very important to businesses. So you want to have it fresh, and it's you know, it's a labor intensive, but it's when you're doing it, you know the end result's going to look and satisfying for the customer and also the customer driving by. So that's kind of how I approach my work ethic, is that I paint it like it was I lived there. I want it to look nice.
Let me say this: you are amazing with this, and I'll tell you, you know, folks always say, Carrie, you do so much of this and that, but let me tell you the thing. I created Hair Radio based on my strengths and things that I already knew that I did well, and I sat down and created a company that would be able to allow me to work at the things I enjoyed doing every day, and I knew that I could work at it forever because I enjoy doing them. And that's how I started the business. And it reminds me of what you're doing. But I'll tell you, the one thing I don't know anything about is painting. And it was evident twice in my life. I never painted. I tried to paint in high school. I never will forget. I had graduated high school, actually, and had moved back to Philadelphia briefly. And so my mom, we had a beautiful place. And I had my own little room there, of course. And I'm trying to paint the room, and I didn't know anything about paint. There must have been some old paint around the house. I don't know. It was super strong, probably some lead paint, God only knows, back then. And I did not know to open up the windows. I know the listeners, the fans out there, they must be saying, Carrie, are you a fool? I have no idea to open up the windows. I'm just starting to feel all lightheaded and dizzy. The house started to smell a reek of paint. I was crazy and never finished it well because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. No idea. So I had developed a phobia. So I never could paint. I tried again maybe 12, 15 years ago to do paint down the street here from where I live now. And I was living in a different place then. And so it was so funny. I tried to paint the wall and I just could not. I literally had to call over a friend who knew how to paint to finish painting the room. I've never been able to do it well. And so, you know, this has been something that has always stayed with me to some big degree. And of course, here's Otto, the king of painting. So, you just reminded me of all those memories of not being able to do something very well. But we all have our strengths and we all have things that we can improve. You know, so I want to learn from Otto. And I want you to, you know, teach us some of the things that we have to do to, you know, I don't even know how to look, you know, to go to the paint store. I remember I was talking with Otto the other day. I'm like, Otto, I can't even think of a paint brand. Do you remember that? I can't paint the company. That's how bad I am. So if you can teach me, Otto, about getting this, fixing up these salons and our businesses and our homes for that much, we're going to be fans. We're going to be forever fans, okay? So we're gonna be getting into that. All right. I think it's exciting. I think it is. Yeah. So we're going to be doing all that.
It'll be my pleasure, Carrie.
Awesome.
You know,
now, listen. Speaking of Otto, this is great that we get a chance to chat. Every so often here on the Hit Radio Morning Show, we want to do that. We want to get to learn a little bit more about one another and our fans. And so Friday, I'm happy about this. We have a wonderful lady who we're not going to say too much today because she's going to be with us tomorrow, and you know who she is, Otto. So don't say anything else because we want it to be a surprise for our incredible fans of the Hit Radio Morning Show. She'll be on about 8:30 Eastern, 7:30 Central Time tomorrow. So she's got some things that she'll be sharing. And we have some interesting talks, so you don't want to miss it tomorrow, the Hit Radio Morning Show. We'll start, tomorrow will be from 6 to 9 as usual each day. And then it should be at some point between today and the weekend. All of our 24-hour networks, we're going to really get up to speed with new content and different shows and new music and all kinds of wonderful things. Speaking of which, Otto, before we just take a little bit of break, I do want to mention I played earlier this song called Fantasy, and it's with ODB. The rapper. He died. ODB stands for Old Dirty Bastard. That was his rap name. And so ODB did the rap portion of the Mariah Carey song, Fantasy. That's the song that you guys heard, Fantasy. And I remember when this was out. Now, this is going back to probably the 90s, around the time I had created the Hit Radio Morning Show. Or, I'm sorry, the Hit Radio Show back then. And I remember, I remember this kid who was an incredible dancer had asked me to represent him as a manager. So I would go ahead and I'd represent him. So we came over, found out that they were holding auditions in New York City for just a video. And so we didn't know who the music artist was at all. No clue. And this young fella, Jermell was, you know, the artist's name, the dancer's name. And Jermell could just dance like nobody's business, like Michael Jackson style, like anybody, just an incredible dancer. So I was happy to represent him. And so we went over to New York City. Again, this was mid-90s. And so he auditioned while we were auditioned in Manhattan, because we at that time I was living in northern New Jersey. And so he did his little thing and got the job. And so he came back to do the, you know, to rehearsals and stuff. And then he found out at the video shoot that it was for none other than Mariah Carey and the song Fantasy. So I've always had, because he got paid, like, I think he got paid about $1,500. I was always so happy then. And got my little cut that time. And I felt great. I was like, wow. So I have a very special memory associated with the song Fantasy. And you guys, of course, is the number one female singer of all time, Mariah Carey. So you can YouTube, you can go to YouTube in a heartbeat and see her video, Fantasy. If you look at the Fantasy YouTube clip, you know, watch the video with ODB rapping on it, and you'll see my good friend, Jermell, who has on a red and white striped shirt dancing. They feature him throughout the video. Sometimes I wonder how great he would have been. He passed away several years back. But had appeared in quite a few different videos, being an incredible dancer. And my big thing I remember with him was that that he wanted to make it big so much, and he couldn't understand at the time why his, you know, being an incredible dancer, he could outdance just about anybody. And so why he couldn't be famous, like the more famous than the people who were doing dancing and stuff but weren't as good. And so that's been a story that has always stayed with me. He didn't understand, I don't believe, that you can have all the gifts in the world. Success is not, just a birthright. You know, talent may be a birthright, but not success. So you have to really, don't begrudge, other folks who have talent. Maybe it doesn't rise to the level of yours, or maybe it does, whatever, but that's not something that you need to be focused on. You focus on your talent and your gifts. And that was the thing. And I remember he was very, he would always be sad that, you know, how come that person is making it and he's not. So I remember, and I believe he, unfortunately, had gotten onto some substance stuff and all that and just perished away. And I look at that video, and I see him just dancing away. And he's forever a part of that. ODB died as well in that video. So I look at that, and what a sad story. What a sad story. So, but we had a great time. And I appreciate folks who have such incredible gifts. It's a shame that we don't always know how to appreciate those gifts. And we don't always know how to interpret those, what they mean. So on that note, it's rare we get a chance to do a special dedication. But here is an Aretha Franklin song called Angel. We'll be back with a lot more to get to this morning. Stay with us.
I got a call the other day. My sister Carolyn saying, Aretha, come by when you can. I've got something that I want to say. And when I got there, she said, you know, rather than go through a long, drawn-out thing, I think the melody on the box will help me explain. Gotta find me an angel to fly away with me. Gotta find me.
But then it's like, you know, I'm kind of wondering, do they know how Kerry Hines fits into this? Because you have been part of a media, I won't say frenzy, you've been part of the media and made some very, very important inroads and, you know, connections that I think that somebody needs to explore and write about or talk about or tell about. So I'm thankful that you're going to help me look back and kind of document some of the things that you have contributed to media and some of the people and lives that you've touched, because I think it's really important and people don't know because you're so humble. And if you would, just indulge me and share with the listeners some of the things that you
wow.
meet as Kerry Hines.
All right, Mary, thank you. That was Mary Reed Johnson, you guys know, from Hair Head Heart. That was a clip taken out of our interview that Mary and I did. I just enjoyed it so much, and she has such nice things to say. And it's rare that I get a chance to play and turn the table, so we'll get that on in days to come. You guys have heard it here before. So Otto, good stuff today. It is moving along. It's Thursday, April 7th of 2022. It's show number 694. Just six more shows, only six, and really five until we're celebrating our 700th broadcast of the three-hour show. 3 hours each day for 700 mornings. 1,000 guests have been on the show. Amazing. Just fun.
It is amazing. It's amazing the effort
yeah.
and the work and the time you put in, the grind. You're a very good example of professionalism and dedication, Kerry Hines.
Thank you. And likewise. And we're traveling in great company. And we've got a lot more to roll out to folks in the days to come. And, you know, we're just kind of getting started. I was telling you, we've had some incredible news stories here as well. This is one, and the reason this comes to mind because there's a new documentary about the Jeffrey Epstein lady, Ghislaine Maxwell. And I remember when TV personality Lisa Bloom came to the show. Let me see if I can get on the beginning of what Lisa said for a quick couple minutes. I think this is one of them, just in one of the news stories that we covered here on the show. Take a listen. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Now, my very special guest joining us right now, you guys know her. She's been with us before. Very recognized name out there in the world of law. It is my honor to bring back to the Hair Radio Morning Show the one and only Lisa Bloom. Good morning, and welcome back
Hello,
to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Now, Lisa, I want to jump right on in. There's so much going on. There's so many trials and cases and so many things happening out there. We had to go right straight to the very best. And so you were certainly on that short list. Lisa, tell us now, you are doing something very important with your work at the Bloom Firm. So you guys are, what is this where you're kind of like monitoring this big case here in New York with it's all about the Jeffrey Epstein case. It's tied into that. Her name is Ghislaine Maxwell. What can you tell us about all of this and make sense to
so
us?
For several years now, I have fought for justice on behalf of 8 victims of Jeffrey Epstein, and he's the very wealthy financier who is accused of sexually abusing underage girls and young women. I represented 8. We fought for them in litigation here in New York for several years, and we ultimately won victory, significant settlement awards for all 8, I'm very proud to say.
Wow.
One of those victims
yes.
also has allegations against Ghislaine Maxwell, his longtime friend, confidant, girlfriend, assistant. She wore a lot of different hats. There's now a criminal trial underway here in New York for Ghislaine Maxwell. Jeffrey Epstein took his own life in 2019, so we can't get justice against him, but this trial is now against Ghislaine Maxwell. And so I'm here on behalf of my clients to monitor the trial, to keep an eye on it, and to be a voice for the victims, because I think that's where the focus should be, on the tremendous pain that these two people caused to so many people, the lifelong psychological injuries that they suffer. And that's what I'm here essentially doing. And I sat through yesterday the opening statements so I could hear both sides. And now I've heard the first couple of witnesses and seen the first cross-examination of one of the victims. And it's very powerful stuff. But so far I'm optimistic that justice will be done.
Awesome, because that's what we wanted to find out. Now, Lisa, I just want to say that folks, so the whole thing is that she's being painted, Ghislaine Maxwell, as perhaps a scapegoat in all this. There are folks out there who are going to say, well, maybe she didn't do this, or maybe she didn't. I'm sure all this is going to come out in these days to come, but what can you say to folks? And I feel, you know, especially those folks that you represent who, and the, you know, the person who is really making this accusation against her. So what do you say when you hear this? And you kind of, you're hearing it, you know, firsthand right there inside the courtroom.
Yes.
What do you say?
Well, this is the primary defense. They began their opening statement by saying, since the days of Eve and the apple, women have been blamed for the bad conduct by men. And that's a true statement, right? But in this case, the prosecution is proving their case against Ghislaine Maxwell, not against Jeffrey Epstein. And so they are constantly having the witnesses talk about what Ghislaine did. She was there. She participated. She lured the victims in. She was at his side. She was present, not for all of the sexual abuse, but for a lot of it. And I think that would be sufficient, that she knew exactly what was going on, and she brought girls into this environment where then they were abused. So she's not being scapegoated for what somebody else did. She's being tried for the actions that she took, the choices that she made.
I was about to say, and any knowledge of it or any part in it is too much, in my opinion.
That's right.
You know, so I have to say, we, you know, and the general public, and this is why I really wanted you to be on the show today, Lisa, because it's hard for us, GP, to kind of navigate some of this information. There's so much out there. I hate to even go to social media. There's so much information going back and forth and on all the TV channels and all of that. So I wanted the fans of the show, because I heard different opinions popping up on all of this. I said, no, we've got to get some clarity on this. What should our takeaway be with some of these huge cases? And we'll definitely talk a little bit more, because I want to get a little bit more on this whole Jeffrey Epstein case and more with the Ghislaine Maxwell trial that's happening right now. But what do you say? How do we even navigate some of this stuff? I mean, it is just poor. And there's another big case starting. I'm like, my goodness.
Yeah, so there's a lot. And what I want people to understand is that every case is a very specific inquiry into the facts and the law of that case. A lot of the cases that we see are really not a good opportunity to make a political statement. So let's talk about Kyle Rittenhouse, for example.
Yes.
In my opinion, the left, and I'm a very progressive left-wing person, the left should never have made the Kyle Rittenhouse case into a political case. This is about a white guy who shot three other white people at a protest. I did not see this as a case that had to do with race. And almost the entire situation was caught on video, on multiple videos. So the only question there was, did he shoot in self-defense? That was the question for the jury. It was not a question about, should he have been there in the first place? Should he have had a gun? Because he legally could have that gun, because we have crazy gun laws in this country, in my opinion. Okay? So the only question was whether he should have been there or not, whether he should have had the gun or not. At the moment that he shot each of these three people, was he being threatened? And the video showed that he was. And so he was acquitted on self-defense. Now, you know, in my opinion, we need massive reform of our gun laws. We should never have a 17-year-old walking around in a provocative situation with an AR-15. That is completely crazy. And that is going to lead to people getting shot. So we need to reform our gun laws. And frankly, these protests did get that particular one. It did get out of control, and the police allowed that. That's unfortunate. So I recognize three Black Lives Matter protesters who got shot by police. So there's a lot of wrongdoing to go around. But the Kyle Rittenhouse case, to me, should not have been one that was elevated to a big public discussion, because I didn't think it was worth that. Now, the one that should have gotten more attention, in my opinion, was the Ahmaud Arbery case. That was
and tell us about that, yes.
Yeah, that was clearly about racism. It was a horrifying case. You know, I wrote a book about the Trayvon Martin case a few years ago and about the racism in the criminal justice system and how abhorrent it is. And the Ahmaud Arbery case reminded me a lot of the Trayvon Martin case. Here's a guy who's minding his own business, Mr. Arbery, jogging, which he had every right to do, just like Trayvon Martin was walking down the street, minding his own business with Skittles in his pocket.
Exactly.
And in both cases, the white guys who pursued them thought that they were criminals because of their skin color, because they thought that other people who were Black in the past had committed crimes. And so to attribute the wrongs of some Black people to all Black people is the very definition of racism. And that's what happened in the Trayvon Martin case. That's what happened in the Ahmaud Arbery case. And in the Ahmaud Arbery case, we have three white guys who chose to follow him to try to get him to pull over. Of course, he got scared because he's being followed by these random guys in a pickup truck. How scary is that? And ultimately, when they accosted him, he fought back. And then they tried to say that's self-defense. No, you can't assault someone, and then when they fight back, you claim self-defense. That's ridiculous. That's what they claim.
Exactly.
And thank goodness the jury agreed, and the prosecution did bring racism into the case, which I was pleased to see, because they failed to do that in the Trayvon Martin case. I thought that was a big mistake. They did talk about the racial angle of the case. It was clearly a hate crime, and thank God they were convicted, as they should have been. They should spend the rest of their lives in prison, which I'm sure that they will. So to me, is justice. Of course, it doesn't bring back the victim. My heart breaks for him and his family. You know, I have a dear friend who's African-American and who's a runner.
Yes.
And he says to me to this day, he's afraid to go out running in the morning. You know, he's a big Black guy, lives in a white neighborhood, and he's afraid.
Yeah, I can certainly relate here in my section here in Brooklyn, New York, and I totally understand. It's just inside of you. But you know, I'll have to say this, and I totally agree with you 1,000%. This is something that I was already conscious of, not to be running down the street. And this was long before any case, because you have to understand that this is a potentiality right now. You know, it's always been, but it's even heightened right now. Now,
you know,
I have to say,
says,
Lisa.
He goes running at 6 a.m. and he says, you know, it's cold. I want to wear a hoodie. But I'm a big Black guy.
Oh, a hoodie.
You know, and I thought, it's my heart breaks. You know, it never, as a white woman, it never enters my mind that, like, I can't wear a hoodie if I'm cold.
That you can't wear a hoodie. That you can't make any sudden movements. And to be really honest with you, Lisa, what's really awful is that you don't even have to even be doing any of those things. You can just to be walking down the street, your mere presence, just as a Black person, male in my case, is enough to make folks think of crime. You know, it's almost your color's been criminalized to a degree. And so what happens, unfortunately, this is what we have to kind of deal with on a daily basis, in and out, where folks grabbing their kids, they don't mean any harm. Don't ever think that they are thinking that you're going to attack their kids. It's almost subconscious at this point. You know, so I don't, I don't necessarily blame people. I get why they are like that, because this is what is, you know, channeled to us through so many different things. But Lisa, my big thing is, when I turn back to this case, and there's some big names tied to this Jeffrey Epstein case. And I shouldn't say that, because this is the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, that she's on trial for her, you know, alleged doings or what have you. So, but there's some huge names. Is there any, I mean, is that's kind of like part of the gossip, if you will, about it, or the unproven facts or what have you, where they're saying that maybe she knows something and, and she's not saying, and maybe she should be saying, and this is, you know, they've got, well, she's got big names to point out, and what is, you know, I'm like, what is, what can we listen to, Lisa?
Yes. So that came into the trial today. The pilot.
Oh, really?
Epstein's plane. Yeah, he named some very prominent people who Epstein's private plane with him. He named Donald Trump. He named Bill Clinton, the violinist Isaac Perlman. Chris Tucker. The actor Kevin Spacey, of all people, who has had his own.
Wow, he already has another set of things going on that he's been cleared of, I believe, at this point. But he's been through his own set of things.
Yeah. So Prince Andrew, of course, and the British
press
is all here because.
And that's a big one there.
Prince Andrew angle.
Prince Andrew
currently being sued for sexual abuse by one of Jeffrey Epstein's accusers, who says that Epstein sent her basically to Prince Andrew, trafficked her. So those names came in, and they came in this trial not to show there's some kind of vast conspiracy with all these people, and I'm sure that, you know, maybe some of them did not know what Jeffrey Epstein was up to behind closed doors. Maybe all of them didn't know. I don't know what they knew, but we know that they flew on the plane with him. But what I will say is that this was very intimidating to the victims. Now, the reason why it's being brought in is, you know, imagine being a 14-year-old girl, and this wealthy man who's taken an interest in you is friendly with a former president, friendly with Donald Trump, who ends up being a future president. I guess they didn't know that at
exactly.
the time. But, you know, these very successful, big-name people.
Powerful,
and the victims
powerful
say
names.
That they talked about this all the time. They name-dropped to intimidate the victims and to terrify them into silence. You know, are you like a little no-name 14-year-old girl? Are you going to go up against that kind of people? I mean, there's no way, and that's why they took so long to come forward.
Wow. And I just, we're grateful that we have folks like the Bloom Firm that's doing the work, that's helping these women to have a voice. We are going to continue to follow this, and because it's just, we didn't quite know what we should have as our takeaway. And my other thing to you, and you mentioned it a little while ago, and I just want to get your take on it. The videos, the video footage. Lisa, why does it seem, and I think we might have touched on this the last time you were on our show, just a teensy bit, but why does it seem like the video footage, it's almost like you can't really trust what you see because
the
way it's kind of spun, you know, like showing like incidents and things like that. So nothing necessarily particular, you know, specific because all of these things, you know, we're watching these different videos, and it's almost like each side kind of spins it the way that they, I guess that's what they're supposed to do. But why does it seem like we can't really trust what we see, or there's always something more to it? You know, shouldn't that be enough, these videos? Like, when I see them on, I'm like, oh, how, that's so obvious. But there's more to it.
Let me answer that, and then I'm going to have to go. So,
video
footage is very important. Juries love it because they feel like video doesn't lie. Human beings might lie or might get things wrong, but there it is on video, right? And I think that was important, as I said, in the Kyle Rittenhouse case. It was also important in the Ahmaud Arbery case because these guys were idiotic enough to video some of what they did. Right?
Exactly.
But it's not the whole story because in the criminal law, we look at not just what happened, but the intent. Did somebody intend to do something? And we have to get inside their mind. And there's no video yet that gets inside of somebody's mind. Did they do something accidentally? Did they shoot in self-defense? Was it an intentional, premeditated act? In a civil case, we look at more than the video because we want to know what the damage is to the victim, how it affected their lives. And so the video shows part of a story, but it doesn't show the whole story. But I agree with you that video, I think that it is important. It's usually the most important piece of evidence when there is video in a case. Juries really like it. They look at it closely. Like the George Floyd case, thank God there was a video. I mean, as horrifying as it was,
absolutely.
Thank God there's that video that showed exactly what happened, and now that killer is behind bars, right? And
absolutely.
He's a police officer, and we saw the video, and it's just so horrifying. And look, millions of people took to the streets in the Black Lives Matter movement. I was one of them. Because we see what's happening, and it's just too much. It's too painful. So I think video is very important.
Lisa Bloom of the Bloom Firm. Your website again is thebloomfirm.com. Want to send folks there. And Lisa, can you please come back soon? We're going to get inside and get warmed up and then come back soon to us here and keep us abreast of what's happening. Okay? You know how much we appreciate you. You got it.
Thank you for having me. I'd love to hear from everybody on Instagram where I am Lisa Bloom ESQ, like lawyer. Lisa Bloom Esk, and on Twitter, I'm just Lisa Bloom, and my website is thebloomfirm.com, and we're very proud to represent victims of discrimination, harassment, and abuse nationwide. Happy to hear from people and see if we can help them out. Carrie, thank you. You're a doll, as
you
always.
Got it.
And I look forward to
talking
to you again soon.
You got it. Thanks again, Lisa.
All right,
bye now.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
All right, folks, it has been an incredible Thursday. Otto, I just love Lisa Bloom. She is just fantastic and so knowledgeable about the law. I mean, she is a court TV reporter, you know, a lawyer, literally. And what is so interesting about all these different cases and race cases, I call them, there was one she mentioned about Trayvon Martin, the one that was then shot in Florida from, the fellow with the, I don't even want to mention his name on our show, but I remember he was walking with a bag of Skittles and anyway, real sad case, but his attorney and George Floyd, the fellow who, the police officer had his knee on his neck and stuff. So these big cases, the civil rights attorney, Benjamin Crump, has been on our very show right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. So we have incredible folks like Lisa, like Benjamin Crump and all these amazing people who help to keep us informed here at the Hair Radio Morning Show. So we do have to inject that part of community into the broadcast. Is it not eye-opening, Otto?
Absolutely. It was that was a very good interview. You sure do help the community, and I enjoy and I'm learning more and more each day, Curry.
Wow.
I appreciate
you. Thank you, Otto. Yeah, thank you. So we're just trying to do our part. And I do appreciate what she said, just everything that she's doing to fight the good fight and just be positive. So listen, tomorrow we're back 6 a.m. Eastern with an all-new show, and it's a special Friday, Fan Day Friday. We have a very special guest. We have a couple of surprises, mid-show, and then we have a live guest will be joining us about 8:30. You don't know her. That's the only hint I'm giving. And she'll be with us tomorrow, and I'm super excited, and it'll be a lot of fun. So I'm working on something special for you guys. So it's about time to get ready to go over to our 24-hour network at hairadio.com. Go to www.hairadio.com. We've got some stuff that's going to be loaded there to play all day and a little later on this morning. So give me a couple minutes. We got to get you set up over there as well. And take a listen, and I'll leave you some special comments over there as well. So check us out at hairradio.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Otto, awesome day. Great job. And thank all of our guests and fans and everybody. Here's the outro, folks. All right. Well, it's that time to bring this episode of the Hair Radio Morning Show to a close. But it does not end here. The show continues over at our...